What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 77 of Value Town. I'm Chan Man V, and he's Noxious, he's Firebat, and he's Sidonia. For those you've never, seen Value Town, I always get crap for like not introducing people anymore. So Noxious is a caster and a content maker, and obviously a co-host of the show. Firebat is a world champion.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you right there.
Okay,
I'm gonna stop you right there for a sec. I was playing a Heliodin game, as I told you, and the game was going very long. Yogg-Saron was played by the enemy mage, and she just entombed my Tyrion. I feel like I got cheated out of a game. You can resume the introduction.
Oh my gosh. This is such a great intro. Anyways, Firebat, world champion streamer, content maker, caster, awesome player. And then Sidonia, first time on the show. He's our America Spring HCT champion. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Yo.
All right. So everybody that's watching, we're going to be, we got obviously a lot to talk about today. Focusing a lot on America's Spring HCT. That's why we kind of have Sidonia on. But we'll also be talking a lot about just decks like we did, you know, last few weeks now. Just talking about some fun decks. Talk about some decks that are good in the meta. Talk a little bit about ladder changes. There's been some talk, or Ben mentioned that they are taking a look at the ladder. Didn't give any specifics, but figured we would do a little, you know, brainstorm session and talk and try to come up with some changes that we'd like to see. And then some viewer Q&A at the end, guys. Send your questions in to either tweet them to me at ChainManV or at ValueTownGG. Or if you don't have Twitter and you're still in the Stone Ages for whatever reason, you can put that in the Twitch chat whenever it comes time. All right, so our week in Hearthstone. So this is the last day of the season. This is either Watchstone or it's just stress fest, right? Depending on what you're doing on the ladder. So how's everybody doing? Like, are anybody trying to get top 100 right now? Actually, Firebat and Sidonia, are you trying to get 100 right now?
Trying to get top 100 right now. It's been a struggle. We've had some ups and some downs. Yesterday I was chilling at I started at like 35 yesterday. Yeah. Lost my first two games to Disconnect. And then went on a crazy tilt, lost a bunch. Climbed all the way back to like 90s, and then you know, you can't stop at 90, you gotta play until like maybe 10 be able to hold in to top 100.
Right.
So long story short, I ended up at 1,100, and then I took some like deck suggestions from friends and people on Twitter, and TJ was trying to show me the TJ was trying to convince TJ has this deck on Twitter.
The Spreading Madness?
The Yogg Zoo? Spreading Madness.
Yeah.
So I played that 8 times. Now I was at 2,000. And now we've been working our way back. And now I'm at 500. I'm in a decent position to go for it for the rest of today after the show. But yeah, it's been brutal and absolutely terrible.
You have
to play
fun, at least.
So many games. No, God, no.
Oh, you're not having fun. Sorry.
Yeah, it's you just have to jam, like, standard decks against standard decks, and you have to do it for, you know, 40 hours or so in the last 2 days.
814 matches, whatever that was.
Yeah, you like over 800 games needed to get there, so no. It does take a while.
Yeah, Sidonia, how about you? What's your experience been like today?
Yeah, I've been trying to rank up a bit, but I'm in pretty much the thousands as Firebat. And everyone is Dragon Warrior. I faced like 6 out of 7, and they were all different people. So if anyone has any idea what beats Dragon Warrior, you should play that. But yeah,
I thought Dragon Warrior was like starting to just fall just a tiny bit in the last few days. But it sounds like the last day, it's still really good, man.
It's starting to go down a little bit. Yeah. People have been like, it was Dragon Warrior versus Dragon Warrior, and then there was the builds of Dragon Warrior without Inner Rage and the builds with Inner Rage, and the builds with Inner Rage were beating the ones without Inner Rage because they're just slightly faster. They get more tempo plays going on. Mm-hmm. So then they all started being the ones with Inner Rage. Then the Zoos started coming out and being like, well, they're playing really low value cards. We can just get them. And then Zoos started getting them. And then now there's like less Dragon Warrior because the Zoos are coming into play. The C'Thun Warriors are starting to come back. And I've been having great success with just regular tempo warrior farming the Zoos and being okay against the more aggressive Dragon Warriors. But you know, it's a whole cycle and it's going to be constantly changing. So you just got to find those small pockets for like an hour where something's going to be successful and keep trying to identify niches.
Yeah, like if you think you're going to go to eat lunch or dinner and you're like on a 3 or 4 win streak, don't go.
Just keep grinding.
Keep playing for another couple hours because that's all you got before like things start changing drastically. So
great ladder system.
Yeah, so that we'll be talking about that soon. But yeah, this is always fun. I particularly enjoy, I think I mentioned it before, but I really enjoy watching like the streams that end up becoming Watchstone a little bit later, like Just Saiyan and all those guys, you know, when they get together and they're already set, you know, they're like in the 20s or 30s and you're just like, yeah, let's just watch these other guys and see what they're playing. And you see all kinds of decks, man. There's always somebody playing some crazy ramp druid or some crazy Yogg deck or Reno deck or something. And it's just like, wow. And they're like, you know, they're really high ranked too.
So yeah, they're just queuing it to people amazing. Who don't expect it and they win automatically.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when it gets really tricky though is when they play that deck against someone they just beat and then suddenly it's the descent to hell because then they're decking all the way back down to dumpster legend. And you'll see that sometimes. Like it's kind of funny to look at when they're spectating.
Yeah. Tilting's real, amazing. Man. Tilting is real for sure. All right, well, let's kick things off. Let's talk about the big event that was just this past weekend. And we have the winner of this big event with us, Adonia, joining us. Of course, that's America Spring Hearthstone Championship Tour. So, big win for you, right, Adonia? This is your first time at one of the, the final days or the quarterfinals of Hearthstone Championship Tour. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. I just went to the prelims once, and I went to the championships once.
Mm-hmm. How was the whole experience for you? Just like getting a chance to go, you know, over there, going, even getting a chance to visit Blizzard campus and everything.
Yeah, it was really amazing. Like Blizzard just takes care of everything. Like they flew you there, they pay for the hotel, so you don't really have much to take care of. I was a bit surprised that we had like no time to visit LA or do anything like that. But like our days are
E-sports,
really
man.
Booked.
E-sports.
Yeah, it was really busy and really exhausting. But like you saw probably the interviews and the pictures they took of us. Well, for like one interview of 5 minutes that you saw, we did like 2 hours of interviews. So,
really?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah,
okay.
It's bad. That's sometimes for some of the players, really, like it takes number one, you're waiting in line, right, to get your interview done. So it's not always, well, not in line, but you're waiting on the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go ahead and take you up for the short blips of discussions, and then they take the most cringy moments, compile them, make you know an introduction, and they say, let's learn more about this player that we've never heard about. And you see the guy say, I dreamed of being a Hearthstone player when I was a kid, and this is my dream, and I'm gonna live my dream, and that's it. Like that's basically what you do as a player there.
It's good to have dreams,
man. I mean, it's good. I mean, this is the only way we get to know these guys. Noxious.
I mean,
so come
you're right.
On,
yeah,
man.
It is. I'm just laughing because it takes so much time for them to get there and do it.
Oh, they got to get their makeup done too.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
the makeup part is like 3 seconds. They just
wait till you go to an event in China. They are all about
oh,
the makeup.
Oh, that's true. That's
China.
True. Wardrobe,
like,
man.
It's literally 45 minutes. They'll do your makeup and then they'll be like, no, we don't like your shirt. Wear this shirt, wear these pants, wear this belt, wear these shoes on. Like literally an entirely different person when you walk out of that.
So do they actually put lipstick on you or no? They don't do that at all the other events. Like in China.
I've never had lipstick put on me in China, but
okay. where have you had it put on you?
Yeah. No, I've never worn lipstick. Okay, guys, okay, come on. Right. You guys, really?
All right. Anyways, getting back on topic, the championships. So unlike the Asian one Asian Pacific one that we talked about last week, I don't feel like the deck lists were too crazy, or not crazy, but at least had a lot of different interesting cards that we don't see here in the West, because this tournament was in the West, obviously. But I figured we should bring up the deck lists and take a gander at it. Let me bring it up here. Okay. Here are the list of, I guess, the top eight and what they brought. Any decks particularly stick out to you, Sidonia, that you ran into, or maybe even one of your decks that was something very different than what we see in the current meta?
Like honestly, before the tournament, people were asking me what I expected the meta would be, and I said everyone's gonna have Hunter, Shaman, Warrior, Zoo, and like a fifth deck that's gonna be Freeze or Rogue, and that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And like what was like surprising is Rusty's Hunter deck was a bit surprising to me because he went really hybrid, so I thought that was pretty interesting. And Dear Jason's Yogg-Druid, those were like the two decks I did not expect, but everything else was really expected.
Yeah, with the Yogg-Druid, we've definitely talked at length with Jackie about the Yogg-Druid, and it's definitely a version of that. But this hybrid Hunter is definitely really interesting, and given that it's a very aggressive version, we have Mr. Aggressive Hunter on here with us too, with Firebat. I figure we should talk about it a little bit. So here it is, and this thing's got Argent Squires in it, and Abusive Sergeants, and no High Mains. Pretty interesting deck. What are your thoughts on it? Actually, Firebat, I'll have you start.
One of the first things that really jumps out to me, speaking of just general thoughts, I guess first is it seems to do most likely have a bit of an edge against regular Hunter, right? Just is simply faster. So the faster deck in the Hunter mirrors usually gets off to a better start. It's got the tempo card in there with Hunter's Mark. They can oftentimes pull a lot of tempo in some specific matchups, and it seems to also have a chance against Warrior, right? Just so many sticky minions that are hard to remove. Argent Horse Rider, and I guess Squire to some extent, can get in a lot of chip damage, be hard to remove, and then Stranglethorn Tiger. Mm-hmm. So it seems okay enough against Warrior, but not great. So it makes sense that Rosty was running this while banning Warrior pretty much every series.
Right.
So yeah, should be able to beat Druid still, especially with Hunter's Mark in there. Seems all around pretty good. The only thing that I'm kind of like questioning about the deck is the Flame Juggler over Knife Juggler choice, because I feel like if you just throw in Knife Jugglers instead of Flame Jugglers, you don't really hurt any other matchup, but you make your matchup against Zoo like way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Double Unleash, especially, I mean, you're already playing that to beat Zoo, so technically you don't have too much of a problem because you're fighting for board. But it is true that just having the extra ability to snowball, because otherwise you're just trading like one minion for one minion every single time you use Unleash, whereas Juggler lets you get ahead, so yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Do you think it would have been a bit better to have maybe Worgen Infiltrator or some more aggressive cards instead of all these like two drops and like board oriented minions?
So face Hunter,
yeah, just purely face.
Yeah, like a bit more face, a bit less hybrid.
Well, the early stages, every deck that has tempo or mid range or hybrid in the name, the only turns that matter are like the first three, right, and winning the board in all of those matchups. So I really like the Argent Squire over the Worgens just to be able to control that. And it also synergizes with Hunter's Mark quite nicely and allows you to run Direwolf Alpha with a bit more consistency, because otherwise Direwolf Alpha kind of stinks without having the Divine Shield bubbles there.
Yeah, is the ultimate Glaive Zooka like hope they used to have? Like having lost that really makes the Argent Squire tougher to justify, but when you're looking at exactly the Direwolf Alpha plus the abuses in the same deck, it's kind of interesting that we haven't seen much of the hybrid Hunter, I feel, for a long time, and now, you know, all of a sudden there it is.
Well, we've seen some hybrid Hunters, just not like this or this fast of a hybrid Hunter,
right? But I mean, like, we're talking about like a hybrid Hunter with abusive plus a bunch of one and two drops. That's kind of the old school hybrid Hunter, which it isn't. Like, we haven't seen much of that.
The reason why we're not seeing any of it, though, is just because on ladder, 30% of your games are against Warrior of some variety. Right. And like almost every variety of Warrior is going to just take this deck to town. Like Tempo Warrior, even with the Whirlwinds, is going to be just so effective. Like the way Midrange Hunter is able to have kind of a 50-50 or even 55-ish sort of edge against the Hunters. All right, yeah, the way Hunters is supposed to have the edge against Warriors, just they actually outlast them and outgrind them by having all the big minions. Well, you've taken out the High Mains, so your outgrind them plan is now gone. So you actually have to kill the Warriors instead of just grinding them out. So it makes it a lot harder to do that when your board is not very resilient to the Warriors' removal.
Yeah, plus the hero power. Even the hero power for Warrior just gives it a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, and gaining... Gaining 10 with C'Thun is pretty good.
Or like 20.
The Ancient Shield.
Or 20.
Or 20, depending on when the turn happens. And especially in the type of deck, usually you'll be able to wait to use that the Shield Bearer with the brand. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that's why we don't see it too often on ladder. I think it's a reasonable choice to bring to the tournament, assuming people are going to bring like their fifth decks. Like most people are bringing Hunter, right? When every single time that there's been a best of seven Conquest format, and we've seen I think four tournaments that have been that format in the past like 2 or 3 months, and every single player or around every single player has had Hunter in their lineup, just because it eventually gets a good matchup because people are forced to bring so many different things, and then Hunter turns out being okay. Especially people like to bring the camel variants of Hunter. This is going to destroy a camel variant of Hunter, because the camel's not going to be good. They're going to be too slow. You're going to get too much damage in. Your unleashes pick up tons of value. So
right.
I like the deck choice in general.
Yeah, go ahead.
The camel version, like usually it's already bad enough in the mirror, but in this one it's especially terrible because even if you get some of the one drops out during the game, you always have more in the back end, which isn't the case with the typical mid range.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll just always have tempo. I mean, you could just almost purely go face against a camel hunter and win. So definitely good. But that, yeah, hunter.
Interesting.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, another.
Interestingly enough, Rosti's hybrid hunter, which seems to be sort of geared towards being able to beat the other hunters, is what lost him the series against Sidonia's hunter. It came down to that matchup. So,
most series, the mid range hunter. Like all hunters performed really bad in the tournament, so I was thinking maybe bringing tempo mage would have been better. Like I didn't have time to test it, but I think it.
Well, I think like RDU's list, choice. Right, that we saw in the last Hero Standing format, like when he ended up taking the DreamHack, that was kind of interesting because he had pretty much the same reasoning that I think a lot of players had, which was, you know, at some point I'll have to play against one of two decks that are going to be good against one of theirs. And I think that's even more likely to happen in Conquest. So, yeah, I think in that case, maybe just bringing up the Tempo Mage instead of the Hunter would have been maybe a bit preferable. It's hard to say, but now that you mention it, it seems to make sense.
There was only one person that didn't bring Hunter, and that was Napoleon. Yeah. But he didn't bring a Tempo Mage. He brought a Freeze Mage, and generally, I guess...
Yeah.
Well, he had actually a pretty good mix of it.
I think it's Napoleon who didn't bring Hunter because he wanted to target Zoo with his lineup with the Freeze Mage, and Hunter is really bad against Zoo, so...
Right.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't his thinking there.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. He had, like, a really defensive C'Thun Druid to go in his lineup, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seems to be the case.
So only a couple of Miracle Rogues three Miracle Rogues, so not too many there. Shaman... And still in the majority of these decks, but yeah, for sure, tempo with Tempo Warrior and a couple Dragon Warriors were just absolute mainstays in these. How many people actually banned Warrior? Like, I didn't actually know the stats between that.
A lot of them, because of two people having Freeze Mage, so they banned Warrior every time, and Rusty made it to the finals, and Napoleon played two matches, so that's five times Warrior got banned.
Yeah,
so I think he got banned seven times in the whole tournament.
Hmm. Yeah. Warrior bans have been... I've been, like, casting a lot of tournaments. Like, I casted DreamHack, and I think almost every round people left Shaman up and panned Warrior instead.
Yeah.
So, like, people are very afraid of Warrior. People just don't want to have to factor that into their lineup. And that kind of makes sense, because if you look at all of the decks in Hearthstone right now, especially if it's, like, a Control Warrior or a C'Thun Warrior, they're just way different of an archetype than a lot of the other decks, whereas like Shaman, Zoo, and those things are all kind of behaved the same way, so you can build your lineup to kind of react to those behaving the same way. And then Warrior, it's either going to behave in the control way that you're just not prepared for, because you can't prepare for that while also preparing for the other end of the spectrum, which is more common, or it's going to be a wild card. You don't know what's in Warrior. There's Temp Warrior, there's Dragon Warrior, there's Pirate Warrior, there's Control Warrior, there's...
They've got a lot of variety. Like,
it's a good time for Warrior. I mean, it's excellent whenever you can build that, you know, that diverse of archetypes.
And, that are viable, too. Yeah, that's the really tricky part. Like, they're all viable, good. And they kind of play into one another differently.
Just the first three turns. I mean, you'd react differently depending on if you knew what type of warrior it was. If it's a control warrior, you're gonna, you know, there's a lot of things that you possibly would do differently in turns one and two versus if playing a tempo warrior, right? So it definitely does make a big deal. It makes sense that they would be banning it. It's just crazy that Shaman's not banned anymore. It's so funny because it was just like a month ago probably, right? That Shaman was banned.
I mean, you still lose to it. Like, that's the thing. Lose to it. You don't ban it, but...
But it's so hard to justify, like, not banning Warrior when you look at the tournament setting, because you're like, all right, I have to build my lineup to counter these things. And then you look at Warrior and you're like, well, if I'm not banning that, then I have to build my lineup able to beat all of these popular variants. C'Thun Warrior, especially right now, is extremely popular, and so is Dragon Warrior, and then Tempo Warrior is also popular in tournaments. So it's like there's three different archetypes of Warrior that are extremely popular in tournaments that you have to make sure your lineup can kind of handle, especially in an LHS format where one could 3-0 your entire lineup. But this one was Conquest, but still. So it's like that's why I think Warrior bans are so popular, just because you can't build your lineup to deal with it because you don't know what it's going to be, and you can't build your lineup to deal with every form of it. So I think it's going to continue to be the trend until there's like one form of Warrior that everyone wants to play.
Yeah,
we're not there yet. And there might be another expansion by the point where that's consolidated at this stage. I feel like it's just moving. So like, it keeps moving. It keeps shifting. It's one of the most shifting metas we've had in a while.
It's good.
Even though like a lot of it seems static in a weird way. Like there's a lot of little tweaks to decks that make the metagame be different at its core.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see.
All right. Well, the next thing I wanted to talk about was I figured we would just maybe take some snapshots from the tournament. We haven't done this in a while, and I figured this would be great since we have Sidonia on, and maybe take some snapshots from some of the plays that he had and maybe talk through it. And it's kind of a mixture, guys, of just some snapshots where very crucial plays versus just some plays that maybe it would just help some of the, you know, just maybe less skilled listeners that are watching just understand. And I wanted to, let me bring it up. I'll keep it on this screen though. Let me bring it up. Where is it? Okay, here we go. Oops, that's not it. Gosh, hold on, give me a second. Okay, so I figured, all right, the first one that I brought up was in the quarterfinals between Sidonia and Dear Jason. This kind of situation came up, and it didn't take too long deciding this, Sidonia, but, you know, we were talking, obviously, preparing for the show, and you thought that this would be a really good play to explain. So why don't you take it? Yeah, I'll just let you take it from here. Oh, are you there? Sidonia?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to see the play because it's super small on my camera.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you have the screenshot here too. I can just give you.
Oh, okay. I managed to do it.
All right. It should be screenshot.
Yeah, that play, I felt was pretty difficult because I feel this is a good matchup overall, Shaman versus Hunter. And here, if I play the juggler and I miss, I'm in a really bad position. But if I get it, well, I can trade the Tuskar and just basically win right there. So I decided not to take it and try to play Feral Spirit and then curve and just outvalue him. But it turned out not to be a good decision since he had the Harrison. But I think it was really a 50-50 play. It's really difficult to decide what is best. I watched Zixo and he thought it was better to play the juggler and go for the 50-50. But he thought like my play was valid as well.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess you are kind of scared of Houndmaster, so that does kind of incentivize the 50-50 a bit.
Right.
But,
just to be clear, he could have 50-50 hit the juggler and then like his Rockbitered it, right? And just had like crazy board control at that point.
Yeah, he might have taken it. I was going to say, like, the thing is you end up using a Rockbiter, which you want to use with the Doomhammer, but it's still fine to just use it for board control because the Hunter is not going to push you off on 4 mana with this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think.
Yeah. I wouldn't have also hated like just Argent Horse Rider the face because I don't like playing Ferals because of the fact of the threat of Houndmaster the following turn. If he Houndmasters it, then it's like super awkward for you to Rockbiter and develop. I guess you have to
waste so much into it.
You have to waste one mana that turn. So if you go Horse Rider face, then he goes Houndmaster it, takes the trade on your 0-2. Then you can Rockbiter your 3-2, trade into that, and then play Ferals and get in more damage in with the Horse Rider face again and.
All right, that's a different line too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that seems good as well.
Too. Yeah, that's actually a good one.
I just don't like being overloaded. I don't think you need to prioritize getting Doomhammer down on 5, so I think it's fine to get overloaded on 4 and then trying to make something happen the following turn. So
the reason I did it was to play Doomhammer on 5, but it was a really bad idea given that he had Harrison, and I don't think I needed to be that that greedy. So should have done something different.
Yeah, it's true. If you do get the Doomhammer down on 5 and he doesn't Harrison it, you usually win the game.
But yeah.
The matchup is so favored, right, that I feel like you can oftentimes win on board against them. I feel like that's why the matchup is so favored, is just because your board control tools are better than their board control tools. So I think just focusing on the minion curve more so than trying to plan around having Doomhammer down on 5 is the stronger way to play the matchup in general. At least that's how I play it, right? I always just board, and I don't even care about Doomhammer at all most of the time, unless, you know, I have Lava Burst, Double Rockbiter, Doomhammer in hand. Then sure, we're going all in on the damage plan. But I think that the board-centric approach is the higher percent way to play the matchup a lot of times.
Well, given how it's favored, too, given how that Shaman is favored in this matchup, that's one of the reasons why you decided not to take that gamble either. Right, Sidonia?
Yeah, because I felt something needed to go really wrong to lose it, because you can see my hand is still, it's a bit clunky, but it's pretty good. I have like all the good cards.
High quality cards, yeah.
So, and he wasn't doing exactly that much, Like, other than Houndmaster, I wasn't really afraid about anything. And I felt, even if I go for Feral Spirit and Houndmaster, it's not like the mm-hmm. worst spot ever. I could still come back from that. The only thing I couldn't come back from was what he had, which was the Harrison.
The Harrison build, yeah.
Okay, see, the next play I have here was a another, actually, game from the Sidonia Dear Jason match. This was actually the last game. It's where you were playing Hunter Sidonia and Jason was playing Druid. And there was definitely a lead up where it left Fandral on the board on Jason's side with as a 3-1, and he had nothing on the board. So you had the choice, and you have 3 mana at the time, so you had the choice of either, you know, playing a minion on the board, you know, whether it was Animal Companion or even Elic, and you know, just trying to play more of that type of you know, tempo play versus just removing with your kill command, which obviously is not optimal. And you chose to kill command the Fandral. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. So I tested this matchup a lot because I don't play against Young Druid that much, and it's a fairly new deck. So that's the matchup I tested the most. And with Dear Jason's deck, every time he gets a Fandral to stick, so many of his cards combo with it. Like, you can even see his hand. He has Riven Idol and Nourish and like... Even all Keeper, the removal cards, Living Root, exactly. Rats, yeah. There's nothing you can deal with once he has a Fandral. Pretty much every card will win him the game, so I really wanted to kill it. And I feel even if I kill Command now, I can still like play the Wolf on 4, and then I can play Animal Companion, Elec on 5, and mm-hmm. then probably draw a 6 drop. So my curve was still probably better than his. I mean, he's Druid, so it's chunkier, and he has less cards than I do, so I didn't mind getting almost no value out of the kill command. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some people were saying, yeah, you can play Companion, and if you get a 2-4 or a 4-4, it contests the Fandral, and if you get Hoffer, you just trade into it.
Yeah, but then they would draft you and draw a card, and then you get completely demolished, and your life
Or even if he just has... Swipe, and then he leads into like all of his five, pretty much every card in his deck that costs 5 can screw you with Fandral, right? The Druid of the Claws, the Nourishes, all that stuff. So I agree with Sidonia's line of play of just killing it. Fandral's scary. Bad stuff happens.
Terrible. Yeah.
I mean, it's really scary when the Fandral comes out and you're like, it got innervated out, so you don't know if the guy's holding on to Wrath, if he's got the Raven Idols in the back. Usually those are a bit less impactful. They matter a lot because they're card advantage and they make up for the loss of the innervate that they waste, quote-unquote, on casting Fandral. But the problem is, like, if they get to 5 with Fandral ever, you're screwed, right? Like, if they've got a Druid Drake, they've got Nourish. And if you play the Animal Companion, I think you get punished way too often for
it. Yeah, well, he's about to draw innervate, so...
Yeah.
You don't want to play Kill Command on 4 either. You want to play 4 drop on 4 because like Kill Command on 4 is like super awkward. So I like using your 3 mana to remove it while you have the option to, because if a Wrath comes out, if a Swipe comes out, and then you're forced next turn to be in that decision where it's like, play Infested Wolf and let him have 5 mana with Fandral or Kill Command it now. But then Kill Commanding it then is just way, way worse. So I think it's definitely the right decision. And as you said, it doesn't hurt your curve at all. You still have a very solid curve of minions following up behind it. So I like it.
Yeah, there's nothing like that knot in your throat when you see Fandral on and it's like, oh, please just have nothing. Please have nothing after.
Yeah, you're praying the guy doesn't have, like, innervate Fandral on 2 and, like, innervate Nourish on 3. You're like, come on. You've got to be kidding.
No, it's just like the Fandral just sitting there on 4. It's always, like, innervate Ancient of War. It's like, okay, GG.
Wisps of the old gods.
Wisps is actually much more painful.
Brutal,
too. Yeah.
Exactly, in the Yogg deck. Holy crap. All right, the last one that we have here is probably the most talked about play that happened this past weekend, which was like probably the second to last. I believe this is the second to last turn of the entire tournament. And it was in the finals with Sidonia and Rosti. And this is the whole deadly shot thing, and everybody's like, oh my god, coin flip for a championship, and that's what everybody was basically saying in the chat and everywhere. But you have a different take on this, Sidonia, right? Just with just playing the deadly shot and what it really meant, and if there was even a risk. So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, I took some time on this play just to make sure there I had no way to lethal without playing deadly shot, but as you can see, well, it wasn't possible. But I know he doesn't have any damage, because if he had 6 damage, he would have played it the previous turn. So and he didn't even go face. So I just feel, it was nice to get the deadly shot and win right there. And he had some outs, but the game was really in my favor at that point, like for the first time in the game, actually.
Yeah, the tracking's a little scary, but you didn't, obviously, you didn't, you just knew he didn't have any damage, at least, with that card, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, it just seemed like, I guess you're saying that the Deadly Shot just was kind of inconsequential. You're just going to do it regardless, and of course, there's an optimal outcome, which is you win right there, but probably a decent shot you're not going to lose next turn, anyways.
Right, you know, like, saying the odds of him actually losing there are really not that high, given the information he's got. Like, it's basically a top deck, and even, like, even if there was a tracking to call the wild, the guy's still on one health at the end of the Huffer going phase for five. Like, there's really... I mean, I can hardly think of anything that kills him right there, unless he cycles, like, quick shots into quick shots, and I'm not even sure those weren't played earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Felt pretty safe, honestly.
Seems like he wins the game, and if he hits the 2-4, then he just kill commands the 4-4.
Right.
Goes. Base, hero, I mean, powers.
I don't know why if there was really a lot of controversy. Like, I haven't been looking at the social media or whatnot, but that seems like a standard, you know, if Rag kills you, I win. If it kills your whatever it is that's on the board, I'm still winning next turn, so it doesn't matter. Like, that's kind of the situation I see here, except it looks like a bit more of a flashy one, I guess. I'm not sure what the uproar is about, if there even was one in the first place.
Yeah, there's no uproar. It's just, you know, your classic coin flip for championship.
Yeah, coin flip for championship tournament, man. I mean, Steel Stone. Yeah.
It's a Hunter mirror. Like, what do you expect to happen?
That's true.
Yeah, it's boiled down to this. There's been decisions in other games. You put yourself in the best position to be lucky. Sometimes you get lucky, but the Hunter's early game, Hunter's mid game, and Hunter's late game, and Hunter's removal is all based on RNG.
Right.
And when you got that going against that, you know, there's going to be some coin flip moments. Every flame juggler, huge toad, fiery bat, deadly shot, like,
Hound
Master hitting on curve, tracking going into the right cards. You know, it's just, Hunter's a class.
Hunter is a class.
That does. Yes, I mean, there's a lot of 50-50s because.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Animal Companion, too. There's that one there. That's absolutely huge.
That.
Sometimes, you like, your opponent has board, and you have to play Animal Companion into it in this matchup a lot of the time.
Gosh,
all Huffer, when they have a 2-1, it's like, well, I guess I'm going all face for the rest of the game, hoping this works out. Like,
and it does work out a lot of times.
Sometimes.
Just given just the nature of the class, which is funny.
It's
Hunter. What can you say? You know.
I mean, I think he took the right play here.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no question about that. He didn't have any other play.
Right. Exactly. But anyways, yeah. So that kind of concludes, I guess, just our the whole segment on HTT. And huge congratulations to you, Sidonia. You know, really, really happy for you, man. And you know, you got your ticket to BlizzCon for the most part at this point. Or you know, just you don't have to struggle through the ladder grind if you don't want to. But it sounds like you're still trying, anyways. So kudos to you for that. And that concludes the second season that we have. So we have one more season of HTT, and then you know that'll conclude everything. I think that ends in September, I believe, right? Something like that. I believe it's like
I think the late
it's August. Yeah.
Oh, late August. That's right. They had some posts recently about August. So in another, I'd say about 6 to 8 weeks. You know, we'll get our third champion, and that'll be our champion for each of the regions, and see how that all plays out. So the next thing I want to talk about was really just some of the interesting decks that we've seen in the metagame. Rondles posted something on Reddit that really featured some of the decks. The Deathwing Ramp Druid, and Tempo Dragon Warrior, Alkyr Midrange Shaman, and Yogg Tempo Mage. I figured we'd take a quick look at these. It's kind of like a summary of meta at this point, or at least some interesting decks in meta.
The meta snapshot is now taken over by
This is a different type of view.
I know, but it has more like emphasis on highlighting decks that are interesting you know, that have been very popular, for instance, that a lot of people have been playing.
This isn't necessarily just the statistical best decks, but these are definitely decks that people got top 10 legend with, and they're interesting. Definitely interesting. Like, I've been trying this one out,
though, right?
I've been trying this one out the last day and a half, and you know, there's definitely a lot of different types of ramp druids out there. But this one, you know, has some flavors with, you know, Deathwing, of course, in it. And you know, things, you know, just like, Harrison Jones, I mean, just Rag and Ysera, just even more late game with a lot of the taunts that you see actually in Druid too. So, Sidonia, what do you think of this deck? I'm not sure you got a chance to play it yet, but what are your, like, just first opinions on it?
I think it looks pretty good. The Deathwing is interesting, of course, and well, like with so many warriors and Druids in the meta right now, I feel that wind can be pretty good because sometimes with Druid it's difficult to clear the board and they can really make boards you can deal with. So I'd love to ask him like how his games usually went, but I feel like it could be pretty good. I'm going to try it later tonight.
Yeah, what's nice about the site too is it kind of it gives you at least a little bit of insight of what you're looking for, like with Mulligan. It's not like a full out play guide or anything like that, but it gives you just a tiny bit of tips to start out with.
Yeah, I guess Varian Wrynn does get shut down a little bit. I mean, you've got the Harrison Jones, you've got a Deathwing already. If you got big taunts, eventually the first ones get mowed through. But again, say Temple Warrior, then suddenly they start having trouble at some stage. Like they might just run out of a removal for it. So suddenly your big dudes are trading 2-for-1. They don't draw on Battle Rage because you might get good clears. Yeah, might work out. I like the idea of it. I feel like Ram Druid is just one of those decks that once in a while just pops up. There's a new list and everybody plays it and then it just gets shut down on the following day and then it's back to normal. But it's definitely cool to see Deathwing like pop in and out. Like there was a time when Fibonacci was playing that like very heavily, I think, a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Deathwing and Druid just makes total sense, right? Because there's no way to just consistently clear full board. Sure. And that's the card. That's actually a card that does it. And like Sidonia was saying, some of these tempo wars and stuff, they just don't have burst at the end of it. So if you clear the board, they're in deep trouble.
Yeah, Varian Wrynn, no charge. You Deathwing, they're dead. Like they're just done. Mm-hmm. Usually they just have no fuel on the back of that. So
Seems like a pretty good deck to be dealing with a lot of the tempo-y, mid-range-y stuff. And then you got your standard, play big taunts and hope they stick against aggro. And then against like the
saying the one of no.
Yeah, sure. Doomsayer also help out a lot against aggro. I still feel like it's like not enough to be able to beat Zoo, Like Zoo's still
definitely
smoke
Zoo
yet.
Is a bad matchup. So, I actually I swapped out the Azure Drake for another Doom just to try to help with some of the aggro decks.
Oh man, what? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the decks that like if you find that pocket where you're just hitting warriors all day and you play this, all the warriors, you're going to get top 10. And if you play it and you're not hitting a pocket of warriors and you're hitting all the Zoos, you're not going to get top 10. So it's one of those kind of polarized decks, I feel. But it definitely, it's Druid. It has a chance against anything, right? So that's one of the big merits to the deck. Even if you hit a bad matchup, sometimes you get Doomsayer or like Wild Growth into Doomsayer, into Nourish, into Ancient War, Ancient War, Ancient War, maybe not three. But you know what I mean? Like big taunts. So you can definitely win against your bad matchups and you have a really good chance in your good matchups. Seems like a solid way to build a deck going for ladder. You don't have too much card draw in the deck, but need
the, one of the issues, I guess, which is why maybe cutting the Drake would be a big issue. Like, if you're hitting the Warriors, you got Harrison Jones, so who cares, right? You've got the card draw.
Yeah.
You do have Fendril, which can sometimes translate into pseudo card draw with Raven Idol. With the Nourish as well, you get the ramp plus the draw. But it's like it's such a high priority target. Isera also makes up for a bit of card advantage loss.
It's good against control. Like Ysera is definitely good against whatever control out there, like C'thun or whatnot. So
the issue is aggro, though. Like, one Doomsayer that you're preying on to help you against
one aggro. That's why I put another one in.
One Living Roots as well.
Okay, you got two cards to beat aggro, and then hopefully
it's amazing that when you win, you Raven Idol Innervates, and Wild Growths and things like, or maybe other swipes. But when you lose, you innervate shitty cards that don't have anything to do with ramp.
It's
definitely bad. I played with this deck like last night, and I think I went from 4-2 pretty quickly. But I did hit a pocket where I was just playing Warriors like nonstop. So, and then I tried today, and then I was just like hitting Zoo nonstop because Zoo is like super popular today. So I lost like 3 or 4 in a row. Okay, so next up we've got, what do we got here? Dragon Warrior. I feel like this is like the deck of this season, like the Dragon Warrior, because at least towards the end of it, it's just been super powerful. And it wasn't until maybe in the last few days that I feel like it's dropped off a bit. But then Sidonia says like everybody's playing this Dragon Warrior right now or whatnot that he's running into. So anyways, thoughts on this, or just for folks that maybe have not played this, what do you guys think? Noxious, you want to start off and we'll work our way down? Yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the things that I appreciated, I think last time we had the show, we were talking about a Dragon Warrior list as well. Mm-hmm. I forget who ended up bringing it to the DreamHack, if I'm not mistaken. We saw Dragon Warrior there. And then I started discussing like different Dragon Warrior archetypes, and I actually got a lot of shit for it.
It was because Frozen, yeah.
Different lists, yeah. Like some of them being slower, some of them being faster, and all of a sudden you see that there is like a metagame pocket with those Dragon Warriors, where there's a huge polarization as to how aggressive they want to be. And you see this kind of, you know, the inclusion of N'Zoth's first mate. Like, there's some people who push the pirate even further in these types of decks, which is interesting. And this one is definitely more on the mid-range side. The issue it's got, I think, is it's going to struggle against some control warrior matchups. Like, if there's a lot of control warrior, you might, you know, have problems just getting...
I don't know. Control warrior is not that big of a deal for Dragon Warrior a lot of the times. Like,
I mean,
maybe
you don't have to trade too much,
control
I guess.
Warrior, I guess. But yeah. Against Cthulhu Control Warrior, they're too greedy, and you usually just smash them with the mid-range threats.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what true. I'm talking about, like a classic control, which
okay, with like bashes and stuff.
Yeah. A full control style with the old school. Like, that would struggle a little bit, but otherwise, yeah, I kind of like that. I mean, you can make it faster even if you want. That's the upside of that deck, I think, is it can be made faster. Like, we see one Inner Rage.
I mean, I've seen people throw in all kinds of things, like commanders, even just anything with charge too. It's kind of crazy, actually.
It's there.
Yeah. So, it's a great deck to ladder with for sure. I went from 5-1 like 3 days ago, you know, just with this deck in like maybe a day and a half. So you can just pound out matches really, really quickly and have like a great winning percentage, at least during certain pockets. Now this is like really, really popular, and you see a bunch of it, so lots of mirror matchups, and that's kind of what Firebat was saying earlier about the Inner Rage change and things like that. This deck was definitely had its moments, and I feel like, you know, if you're gonna pick a deck for this season, I think this deck was probably the you know, just the deck of the season.
Yeah.
All right, next up, let's see, what we got here? Oh, we got more of a mid-range shaman that has the Alkir. So Alkir's back in shaman, which is kind of nice to see this old friend, because we haven't seen him in a long time. It used to be like the only way shaman could end games. Yeah, let's talk about this edition. Firebat, you want to start us off here?
Yeah, it's a lot slower than the normal shamans. Like, even mid-range shamans, it's greedier than a lot of the mid-range shamans, right? Some of the mid-range shamans play, like, double Thunderbluff Valiant and no Fire Elementals, just because, you know, Thunderbluff Valiant's a 7-drop already, and now you have 6-drops in there as well. So it's definitely on the higher end, more greedy side of things. But then to make up for the greed, you've cut the Manatide Totem down to only one. Typically speaking, mid-range shamans play 2 Manatide Totems, but you don't need to draw as many cards when your cards are just more powerful in general, so... it seems like a pretty solid build overall. It's taken away some things from like the traditional mid-range shaman build, which was like the Loyans build, had the like primal fusion in there, and sometimes even the bloodlust instead of the fire elementals, and no Alakir. But everyone for mid-range lately has been leaning more towards Alakir, just because they find it more consistent than bloodlust, I guess.
It's not as expensive as Doomhammer.
Basically. It's a taunt too.
Like it's a taunt, and it gives you trading potential and killing potential since running. Like, this deck doesn't run the Doomhammer, right?
Too much aggro out there for the Bloodlust, which was the other thing. So yeah, I think it's a solid build of Shaman. The thing that it probably struggles against, though, the reason why I think it's more greedy is because when Sho was playing this, I was actually watching him stream it, and he was running into a lot of Cthune Warriors, and the addition of having just more threats in the deck in general, having the extra Fire Elementals in there, which aren't typically in mid-range Shaman, and also he has the Harrison Jones, which is, not only does it remove weapon, it's still a 5-4 body. You need it to line up with Gore Howl, otherwise you always lose to the Control Warriors, but this was before the Dragon Warrior all started being popular, when every warrior was expected to be Cthune Warrior at that time. And just having this greedy, slow shaman was able to beat those decks and also do pretty good against the aggressive matchups, just because you can have those shaman starts where you have Tunnel Jog, Totem Golem, you know, and just deal with whatever. So I think at the time it was really good. I think currently in the meta, it's probably not going to be one of the best choices, because those Dragon Warriors are fast. And they'll get you.
They own the totems all the way through,
and then you'll be dead unless you roll high on every single storm hit. And even then, it's often not even enough. Like, the thing is, Fairy Dragon does so well against Tunnel Trog. Like, it's one of those things where they can't bolt, they have to rock fire themselves, and then sometimes they get to steal a kill with it. Like, if you get Thrill's Spirit perfectly on time, it's fine, but if you land the Totem Golem, there's the ghoul in the back end, there's the weapon, there's Zoth's first mate. Like, they've got a lot of ways to just remove your stuff as you go along. So
even plays like Ikor, you know, that play, yeah, just to put another 2-2 on there and do it, it makes so much difference in that matchup. And Dragon Warrior tends to get the better end of the first two turns, which is shocking, right? Because Shaman's first two turns are definitely one of the best. And without that start, yeah, these type of mid-range decks were, even that, you know, that deck, like you mentioned Fire Destroyer, I love that card, right? Even my little Crusher deck, just like, it can't get any momentum to even have those cards get full value. So Donia, what do you think of this deck?
I don't have so much experience with mid-range Shaman because I was under the impression that aggro is just better in most situations. But this is pretty much the slowest you can build it. And people keep telling me... they get their Doomhammer Irisand constantly in this meta since like the deck is so slow, so they're going to have the time to draw their Irisand pretty much every time. So I think I probably like not having Doomhammer. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure that's his logic there. And he still has enough early game, like the Squire Flametongue combo. So I can see how it works.
Definitely solid. All right, I think there's... one, is there one more? Oh, there's two more, actually. Okay, so there's two more left. The Yogg Tempo Mage. Okay, so I think
that's the exact list the Hot Form was.
Exactly,
running, right?
This is Hot Form's list. So I think we talked about this some already. We can just kind of skip this one. Previous episodes, guys, you want to hear about Mage or Tempo Mage? You can check those out. And the last one is this Questing Adventure. So this is like a Miracle Rogue with Questing Adventure, and you know, just that's basically the difference, right? There's two Questing Adventures. I was watching Amnesiac play this. I think Sidonia, you did too, right? Like, was it our conversation that we were? I was watching Amnesiac play it, and he was just like getting so frustrated playing it. So, I'm curious what you guys think about this deck. Sidonia, you want to start off?
Looks like just Amnesiac proving that he can switch cards for worse cards in any deck and still win.
And still win.
Yeah. He definitely was winning a good
card, right? It's just like Deadly Shot. Okay. You know, it's just one of those things where so much of the stuff that already punishes you suddenly punishes you earlier and you're still out of resources, so you just fizzle out even faster. It feels slower, a lot slower.
Well, it's definitely slower because it's made to be more of a combo finish, right? Like, with Quest of Adventure, it's just a different combo finish. It's not like Leroy or anything like that. It's this finesse combo finish, which you know, for top players, you know, like Amnesiac and things, that this is fun, right? So
That's a fun deck. It's got like two cards out. That's not Miracle.
It's also just better against aggro, right? Aggro, you don't have Leroy clunking up your draws. You instead draw a Questing Adventure. Mm-hmm. And then against aggro, you backstab, prep something with Questing Adventure on the field, and suddenly you got two Edmund Van Cleaves in your deck against aggro, and you're just probably a lot better against Zoo, and I'd say even probably better against Shaman with this sort of build. And that makes up about like 15-20% of the current meta right now, so you're improving some of your matchups. I feel like you definitely got to be making a lot of matchups worse with these changes, but
I think so.
If you're able to kind of navigate your way into hitting those zoos, you're going to be performing a lot better than a standard Miracle list would be.
I saw somebody playing like the Questing Adventure list, and they had—I don't know what they subbed out because I didn't get to see the list itself—but they were playing Ardent Squires as well. Since they had the Cold Bloods, they threw in like an Ardent Squire. I don't know how many, maybe just the one, and they topped it with Argent Commander. So it was a mix of like Mystery.
Yeah, that's like Yagoot's deck. Yeah.
Questing Adventure sprinkled in, so it was really like an interesting hybrid between. Like the three core archetypes, I guess, in Miracle Rogue. So
I mean, it's just about the finish with Rogue, right? Just the different decks are just some variation of how to finish. And Questing Adventure just brings back the old days, man. The old Miracle Rogue, the original, the OG Questing Adventure. If those of you don't remember or didn't play in the meta,
was
basically the way people would end. I mean, Questing Adventure used to be, was it +2/+2?
No, it's always been this. The only issue is
God, I don't even remember.
It was just getting concealed for zero, and
we're
playing Shadow Step. Shit was one mana. Like it was retarded.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Crazy
and you
days.
Could keep it from a stealth in, so that's why it was really obscene.
Yeah, it was. I think it was afterwards that, you know, the Leroy and Shadow Step stuff came in, but I think Quest Adventure was the like literally the first deck I think we saw with Miracle Rogue. All right, well, I think that's gonna be it for the decks, I believe. Okay, yeah, nothing left, but yeah, definitely check that out, guys. You know, just a definitely good guide, and for folks, you know, looking for some decks too that aren't, you know, looking that are, you know, finished reading, completely reading the Tempo Storm meta report and looking for some more stuff to read. All right, next up, let's Miracle Rogue. All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for the decks, I believe. Okay, yeah, nothing left. But yeah, definitely check that out, guys. You know, just a definitely good guide and for folks, you know, looking for some decks too that aren't, you know, looking that are, you know, finished reading, completely reading the Tempo Storm meta report and looking for some more stuff to read. All right, next up, let's talk about ladder change wish list. Yes. So Ben Bro, just at least on Reddit, or Ben mentioned on the was it the forums? Or I forget exactly where, but he basically was asked if, or there was some mention of just the ladder and the ladder needing some changes, or somebody wishing that there would be some changes. And Ben mentioned that they are taking a look at the ladder. It was a really short answer. It was like one or two sentences, so he didn't give us any details. But I figured it would be a good discussion to talk about what we would like to see with the ladders, given that you know, we have professional players here that where the ladder plays a big role in it, and as well as, you know, me and Noxious who like to chill out in the you know, the non-legend ranks or whatnot.
Oh, I barely play. I mostly exactly. play like a co-op, I mean, play with people and like on Skype or something.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it's definitely a different experience. A lot experience, more fun that right? way. Yeah, the ladder's a different experience in that versus the legend ladder. So yeah, what are your thoughts on the current ladder? I guess we should just start there. Like, how do you feel about the current ladder? Sidonia, let's start with you.
I feel it's still pretty good, but like there's a few things that feel really bad about it. One of them is always going down so low when the season ends, so you have like a week or two of playing like weaker players or just trying to climb your way to where you were previously. Mm-hmm. So I think that could be addressed maybe. And the other thing that feels bad is at the end of the month, where it feels like the last two or three games you will play are way more important than the previous 100 games or 200 games you played before. And the whole MMR is really structured in a way that it's like, what have you done for me lately? But being consistent is not really rewarded. It's mostly getting a win streak at the right time. And the last thing is that since the MMR, like in Legend ranks, is hidden, sometimes you have no idea if you're going to lose like a ton of points, if you a ton of ranks if you lose a game, or if you're still pretty close to like mm-hmm. having the rank you want. So I felt that could be a lot better.
Yeah,
I agree with a lot of that, especially the whole the last three games are basically all that matters for your placements for HGC points. Like, you can play well all season and then just bad luck in your last three games. Looks like you don't get top 100 or whatever, or top 10 if that's what you're going for. So, like, that feels pretty crummy a lot of times, especially when towards the end people would be at, like, rank 20. And if you lose at rank 20 trying to push for top 10, you just drop out of top 100 sometimes. And it's just like, well, one game at the end is determining your entire placements between all of the points there at the end, which just seems absolutely silly. It's just rewarding luck more so than rewarding consistency.
How much? And, I guess so. How much of it is that, like, your dislike for it is more to do with the HCT format, you know, them rewarding with points given, you know, like top 100 and, or whatnot, versus the actual ladder itself?
Well,
so you mean like if they were to give players let's just say
they give top 500 points, would it affect you as much just feeling the drop, you know, like having, you know, just a few matches deciding whether you're, well, you know, ranked really high or not?
There's no meaning of being ranked really high if there's no points. So I guess I wouldn't feel anything. The system would still be crummy. I wouldn't feel anything about it, though. So I think what I'm looking at the ladder as a whole, I just automatically incorporate HGC points into
sure.
that.
Okay.
Like, I think it's all sure. one system that works together, really.
Okay.
So I think they could make just either end of the system to try and improve it a little bit. But I really dislike the fact that, you know, the last five games you play determine your placement. Like, I don't think it should be that way. I think there should be some ability to, you know, sit on your rank, or some ability to reward consistency more in there. And also, I don't really like, what was I going to say? I totally forgot because you got me talking about the whole,
yeah.
MMR? Gosh, darn it. I think it's fine that you can't see that. Like, I don't care about knowing how many points I'm going to lose. I know I'm pretty much screwed either way if I lose. So, yeah. You know, it's just, if I always win, I don't have to worry about losing points. So I think it's fine if they conceal that.
So here's a question. Like,
for one thing, go ahead, though. I think they should, you know, narrow the MMR gap that you queue into. Because oftentimes, like, you'll be at, like, you know, 50 legend, you'll queue versus the guy at 5K and he'll be playing some dumb face deck and just meme you by turn four. And then it's like, well, rip your season.
I'm done for the season.
Exactly. That's, you have so much more to lose than gain in that scenario. Yeah.
I was going to ask the question because, like, I was going to mention exactly that. Like, do you think the gap in MMR should be a bit smaller? And as a result of that, like, if they ever implement a, like, closer MMR gap, you know, it's a trade-off, right? Because if you do that, then suddenly the queues are longer, and then even though that might not matter for the common of mortals who are sitting at rank 15, you know, which is, like, the bulk
of the... They could adjust it, though. They could adjust it for the, like, if you're at rank 15, obviously it doesn't matter the MMR.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't matter for those. Like, at that stage for them, it doesn't really matter. And that's the thing, like, the trade-off that you usually encounter when you're trying to tweak those MMR systems is... the queue times get a lot longer if you're trying to narrow that gap. And as a result of that, it sucks for the quote-unquote casual player who queues into the exact same people as the top-tier players. But given the fact that the legend, like the top of the legend, usually ends up being, you know, a lot of players who typically have similar MMR, the queue times might be longer, but they're embarking on a grind. And I think they'll all have the equal chance of getting those games in by the end of the season.
I don't think anyone's going to mind like 5 or 10 second longer queue times.
It might be a lot longer than that, though. They do the parameters. But like the question I've got as well is, what about you just get points as you win during the season? Or is that too much, like putting too much emphasis on volume and not enough on win rate?
What do you mean? Like,
emphasis on volume.
That's the opposite of what we want. We want to reward consistency rather than grinding a lot of times. I think one of the main focuses of the system thus far has been just rewarding players that grind the most. That's why you can enter in as many tournaments as you want and do all this work. And that's great. You should definitely reward people for hard work. I just think they maybe overdid it a little bit because now I don't have time to grind all of this stuff while I'm doing all of my other obligations. So then I start running behind on things because... the most important thing is just a volume of tournaments and a volume of ladder games. And when you got other stuff to do, it makes it really hard to compete.
All right. So we kind of threw out a bunch of little things there. So why don't we focus on just like, I guess, certain aspects of the current ladder and then just, you know, see if we should change it or not. So Sidonia, you mentioned the whole just starting at rank, whatever, 15 or 14, basically every season and forcing the grind. Like everybody has to grind. Even the number one ranked legend player has to go back and grind back up to legend. All right. So should this continue? Like, do you guys think that this resetting thing and just having to get back to legend is a good thing? So Donnie, it sounds like it's not a good thing for you.
It's not that I feel like it's a grind because it's not.
It's not a grind for
long.
You, of course.
To get legend, but it's just the fact that the first 100 games you play in the month are gonna be against like a different meta than you're used to. So all the decks you try or is just not gonna be meaningful for your testing. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest problem I have with it. But it can still be fun. I get to try new decks and like not take it as seriously. But it's just like something you have to do every month that doesn't contribute to make you better or
It sounds like your schedule, I mean, you didn't have to go from 15 to 1. That would probably make your life a lot easier.
It would open up a lot more time to do other things and it's meaningless, right? It doesn't help anybody at all. So I think one of the things they could be doing is like after you hit legend, maybe you unlock like tournament ladder or something and then you have like that you could do, or maybe you just start it, because I don't think starting at legend every season is gonna be great once you make it to legend, because there's some people that like spend all month and just try and make it to legend at the end and they finally make it and then they probably don't want to be just getting smashed in legend.
I feel like you could start at maybe rank 5 since everyone that plays a certain amount of game will always get to rank 5 basically, so removes everything. It removes what people perceive as a grind and leaves the part where like winning and losing matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would like that. I think that's a good fix for it. But I also think that like they created conquest format to make tournaments more like ladder. Why can't we make ladder more like tournament?
That's right.
Why can't we have a tournament mode in the ladder so you do like best of threes or best of fives on ladder? That'll, one, cause the more consistent players to be more successful on ladder and alleviate
There's been so much talk of tournament on this podcast. At this stage, I feel like we're beating like a rotten horse, dude. Like, it's just beyond dead at this stage. Well, I mean,
if we were to do, I want to a 3-on ladder, though. That would take forever, dude.
No, like, it's fine. Because,
for
like,
people that want to compete, right, they don't care.
It needs to happen.
The people that want to compete aren't the people sitting around on their phones having a jolly good time. The people that want to compete want to play best of fives, best of threes. They want to actually play the game and have the most chance that their skill matters.
Like,
that's what would make them feel great. Like, I don't feel great playing best of ones all day, but if I was playing best of fives all day and I'm like, I can actually outplay these people, I can build a lineup, I can think and use my brain and win, then I'm going to get a lot less tilted when things are decided by 50-50 flips, because it's going to happen less often that they're decided by 50-50 flips, because then I can be like, well, I just still have my counter deck, I have my lineup that makes sense, and I can follow through with my plan, and there's going to be more influence on skill based on that.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you'll still run really bad sometimes, but the issue with the current system is that, like, you can't, again, I've mentioned that before, but, like, it's not, people compare Hearthstone to poker all the time, but I can't fold my fucking hand in Hearthstone. I have to play the best of one, and so much is on the line for competitive players, right? And I feel like they've got it right, the whole conquest idea for tournament systems, if that's what they want to mimic ladder with. But the issue is, like, if Hearthstone is meant as a casual game you're supposed to play while you're taking a shit, then, you know, that's fine. No, but, like, if that's how they, you know, people perceive it, then that's fine for them. But if there's going to be a competitive scene with people who actually, like, spend hours and hours and hours every single day practicing and building perfect lineups for tournament systems, the fact that you have to get, like, an external setup to do that is just mind-boggling. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
There's so much that you have to do as an organizer, for instance, beyond even tournament organization, as a player to practice to get ready. Like, there's so much you have to work on that's not even embedded into it. So, like, practicing against, like, best of threes or best of fives or best of sevens within the client would give you the ability to have a playtesting session without necessarily relying on, like, a scheduled playtesting against specific players.
Like, you don't need to set up a time to, like, play with your friends or whatever. You can just go into the game, press the tournament ladder, and test your lineup. And that's going to cause definitely, like... Like, there's going to be a more diverse tournament meta, I imagine, because people are going to figure things out faster. Things are going to be,
I think that's faster. A good idea. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's a great idea, because right now, like, if we had the ladder just currently as it is, and we took away, I guess, the grinding up to ladder or just the playing through the, you know, the lower ranks up to legend, I feel like you guys would just get bored. Like, you guys started in Legend? I mean, there's
bored.
No incentive.
Like, they're already bored.
I mean, there's no incentive. You're already bored after a week anyways, right? Or 2 weeks.
It doesn't matter, just, like, that. Because the thing, what makes it boring is that it's coin flips all the way through. Like, do you queue into a good matchup or do you not? By, like, against each individual.
That's pretty much what it is, too, yeah. Like, the most important thing about ladder is your last 10 games, if you get good matchups in those, you're going to finish top 10. Like... That's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Well, they could give incentives too, like throughout the season for being
like what?
I don't know exactly what the incentives are, but I mean, maybe there's a weekly tournaments that, you know, you can only play in these tournaments if you're top 100 every week, like each week or something like that. Just talking about what they currently have, you know, and to have just to make the ladder just meaningful. Now, this whole other tournament thing that you're talking about would be great. It's just we know that's not going to happen very easily, you know, like from the standpoint of design team. Even what we currently have, if you just give incentive, you have to give incentives for them to play at Legend. So therefore, if they start in Legend, that's fine, right? But
they have incentive. Points. It's like the points are already there. They have every single reason to want to get to the top. If you're like saying making every single match during the season matter more, then the whole like gated tournament system is all right. But you still don't address the problem of the ladder system defining your ability to enter those tournaments, which then give you points. Because getting to that top 100 is just going to be every single week you have those last three games that matter the most.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, and that's
the problem.
Okay.
Like.
Okay, so that leads to the next thing, which is basically you're just like kind of this
MMR
like jumping and stuff.
Exactly.
First off, I want to bring up just MMR transparency first, because we're seeing a lot of other Blizzard games literally just showing MMR, right? Like SC2 is doing it now. Like for the longest time, man, it was completely a black box, or at least they would never show the MMR, and you would just be holding your breath whether you get promoted or not. Now they're actually showing it. Heroes of Storm shows it now. And I think we're getting to the point, you know, Hearthstone's been kind of like semi-showing it, you know what I mean? Because the rankings are actually true. It's just we don't actually see the number itself. my opinion is I feel like we should see it. Like, at least in the ladder ranks, just show us the MMR. Like, everything outside of ladder, you can keep it the same. It's fine. You know, like, I think all the players that are not, like, the highest of tier still doing the same kind of ranking system is cool. But I feel like once you get to that top legend, like, we want to see. Like, we want to see how many points we gain and we lose and really know the effects of it. That way we can even give better feedback, I mean, as to what we want to see.
Here's another problem as well with MMR narrowing, right? And that's happening in just about every game that had it. When trading,
yeah,
if you can narrow, yeah, like it's yeah. It already happens in Hearthstone, and the MMR gap is like super fucking huge. So when you look at the narrowing of MMR as something you want to implement, again, it's a trade-off. Like, the time that you wait for a queue, that's one thing, but there's also the whole integrity of the competitive system that has to be taken into account. And
there are fail-safes in place now, right? I mean, yeah, we've gone through
it
wind
seems
trading.
Like there are. It seems like there are. Now, whether there's a lot of false positives is another story. I don't know. I'm assuming there's less than there are, like, real people being caught when trading. So if you put your faith in the failsafe, then yeah, like, I think it would be a good idea to narrow the MMR gap.
There's still, like, a lot of issues right now with win trading, and then there's issues with people, like, stream sniping. Like, people that stream freeze mage experience this problem a lot. Because I watch a lot of Hearthstone streams. When I see someone, if you just chart the amount of time someone that streams freeze mage plays against the same exact person playing control warrior, it'll kind of blow your mind. Like, I've watched some, like Laughing playing freeze mage, for example. I'll watch him play, you know, a couple hours or whatever, and he'll verse the same control warrior guy like five times. He'll be the only guy on ladder playing control warrior.
That is brutal.
You know, that sort of stuff happens a lot still, and it's usually people that are camping at, like, you know, like rank 50 legend, and then they just wait until there's a freeze mage streamer, then queue control warrior into that guy, get their free win, and then just wait until there's another freeze mage streamer, and they just repeat that process. So it's something that I've noticed that's happened before. I don't know how you stop that.
Brutal.
Unless you just, like, put a delay on your stream, I guess, would stop that.
I mean, you still get queue sniped, even just having someone on your friends list, right? Like, you can definitely stream, not stream snipe, but just queue snipe.
Yeah.
Queue
dodging is very common. Like, queue dodging
That's pretty dank if you're queue sniping people on your friends list. All right?
Well, the game should not
really
tell you that someone's queuing. But, dude, like, it shouldn't say somebody is searching for a game.
Yeah, I don't know why it does that.
Yeah, I have no fucking, like, opening patch in an arena. Fine. But, like, searching for a game, that's legitimately, like, the stupidest thing in the world.
Yeah.
For queue dodging and win trading.
Another thing that's really kind of crummy about the system is the thing that everyone does with their last game called free rolling.
Yeah.
So basically what everyone does is they wait until there's 10 minutes left on the season, and then wherever they're at the rank, they queue up, and they queue up with usually Control Warrior or C'Thun Warrior, something like that. And then if they start losing the game, they just keep armoring and roping out the entire turn, every single turn. And then if they're winning, they try and end the game as fast as possible, get their wind, and then they get there from, like, you know, 20 or whatever to top 10. And oftentimes, you know, if they lose,
it works.
Like they can armor out, and they can make sure that even if they're losing the game, they lose after the time has ended.
Yep.
The time should just count that game. It should count the last game.
It should always count the game
that you play. That you start before.
Yeah, if it started before, it should count it, but it doesn't. So people abuse that system every single time and just screw people out of their placements all the time and try and shore up theirs. So I've had that happen too. They'll queue into people that are at like 110 or whatever that are like, all right, I need my last win to make it into top 100. And then they verse some guy that just ropes them out every game, and they just miss their opportunity to even get into top 100 because they couldn't play the game.
Right.
And the thing about that, it's like a lose-lose situation. Mm-hmm. Like, last month I was in the top 100 and I didn't even queue that last game because I felt if I was going to lose, I would have to rope, and then you look bad and people make a post about you on Reddit or whatever. And if you lose, it's bad. And if you're going to win, your opponent's going to rope you anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not even worth playing that last game. That's how I felt about it. And I wanted to ask you guys a question. Because as we were saying, we want to reward consistency and still limit the grind at the same time. So how many games per month would be meaningful? Because maybe you could make a system where you could decide if you wanted to play like games that count or games that don't count for your end of month ranking. And you would have to play, say, 200 or 250 games that would count, and maybe make a way that out of those games that count, maybe the MMR gap would be more narrow, but you would not be allowed to play the same person twice to reduce like win rate.
Yeah. That's like, an interesting
like and, that's the thing, right? It goes back to the tournament where you have like casual tournaments and the ones that could be quote unquote competitive, right? That's the goal of their casual queue, basically, is having a place where you can play decks and not get ranked on it. The issue is, like, casual is really not a good place to practice, which is, you know, it's a kind of always been that way. So if you want to play Hearthstone and not be ranked for it, it exists. It's just not a place you can play your real decks for any type of meaningful experience.
But so you're suggesting like a limited amount of games, basically quality, right? Like saying like in 300 games, like all of us only have chance to play 300 games that are considered rank, and based on how we do in those 300 games, based on how we do with those 300 games, then that's what the ranking is. That's an interesting way. Yeah, that's I don't know.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, yep. I think that would be. It's just a completely different ranking system, and if you couldn't play the same player twice, then that would be pretty cool. It would just depend on how you match people up. Like there has to be some kind of variance or range that you know an opponent is like a viable opponent is given to you, right? Like it can't be just like you're playing a bunch of scrubs, right, for those 300 games.
Yeah,
or,
exactly. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a cool system.
I like the idea.
Yeah.
I think it's been suggested before. Like, we mentioned having, like, a narrow... Like, you take a certain set of games. Maybe Reyna was on, but we discussed, like, having a certain amount of games that count and the rest kind of don't. But, like, I guess if you want more volume to increase, quote-unquote, your win rate, then you really don't have the opportunity to. And, like, from a game, from a pure ranking perspective, like, what's the number where variance is accounted for and suddenly your win rate is meaningful? Like, that's the question that you have to ask.
Like Hearthstone, that's going to be a big number.
Yeah, it's going to be like 2,000. Right. From my perspective, I'm like, yeah, play two games in a season, just like, fuck it. Yeah. At this stage, you might as well not do it. But yeah, I like the concept of restricting. Like, it's kind of like adding tournaments, right? Where if you play in tournaments, then those matter, and then the ladder or whatever other system you've got as a side project doesn't as much. So it's like restricting where the points are acquired, as opposed to it being this Wild West thing where so much emphasis is being put on the last minutes.
I feel the reason, like, they make it so that only your last 20 or 25 games matter is because, like, if someone loses 20 or 30 games with a deck they were trying in the middle of the season and get down too low, there's no way they're going to get back up. But now with the system how it is, you can just get a good win streak and then get back up no matter how far you are, if it's still like the middle or two-thirds of the season. And it doesn't ever encourage someone to just stop playing and wait till the next season. Which another system that rewards consistency, well, it would encourage not playing.
Also, other games have implemented like timed leagues, sort of things. Like Path of Exile, for example, will have like, you know, league events that'll happen, like, and they'll be like a day long or like an hour long, or, you know, it's sometimes like 7 days long. So maybe we could have like a ladder thing that's like only a week long or whatever. So that'd be like the ladder week. And so like that the nothing really counts for the points until you get into these events, which then count for points. So like the last 7 days of the month or whatever is when actually you can start earning MMR towards those points.
Yeah, I mean, the infrastructure is kind of there in the way that they have Tavern Brawl set up, where it's only open a certain amount of time. So, like, the idea of having a mode open for, like, a narrow amount of time per week is already there. It's just a matter of them implementing the whole, like, a competitive system into it, like the MMR calculation, the point gain, the placement, how many of them can you play, how do you, like, that's a big deal.
I feel like
I'm still just biggest fan of just having tournaments be ladder.
Yeah, dude, like, I just want tournaments in the game. I just don't get why.
I just want in-client tournaments that I can queue up for ladder and then play a best of five on ladder and just grind that way. That would be the most enjoyable change for me by far.
Yeah. You can probably, like, push it enough that they will eventually do it.
They're never going to do it. You know how much worse. They're making so much money with the way that it is right now that they just don't.
Well, I mean,
they don't want you to feel bad for losing, I guess.
Well, this kind of leads to, again, like, well, so what we're talking about, so a lot of this conversation has a lot to do with Legend. And Legend is actually a very small percentage of all of the Hearthstone players. So, I mean, in some ways, everything that's not Legend is the casual ladder right now. And I think the casual ladder right now, the way it functions is fine. The only thing I would say about the casual ladder is I wish the seasons were longer. That's the only thing, because like the people that do, at least for the casual ladder, not so much for like,
well, it's no, a different dude, problem. Like, legend,
I was gonna say the season's long right now.
That's because you have nothing to do right now, you know. So it's like the legend folks literally have the pro players have nothing to do until like the last few days. But yeah, for the casual player, I mean, there are a lot of people that just grind, and like, you know, when they actually make it to legend, that is their end game. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, just getting there. And a lot of people, they just make it and they just get to enjoy it for like a day, you know, a week, I don't know, whatever it is, and then they have to do it again, and they don't even know if they can do it again, you know what I mean? So it's like two different things, and I almost think that the ladder should be separated in some way, and maybe, well, that tournament ladder is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, like, once you have the tournament mode in, it's by default just like separated. And the thing is, even right now, like, if all the legend players start at rank 5 by default, they can basically like separate the competitive ladder from the good players will already be moved all the way up, and the people who are climbing from all the way down. Like, basically, it'll mean that between rank 20 to rank 5, it's casual stone and just you have fun. And then once you hit 5, you better prepare for the grind. But the grind doesn't start at like 17, where suddenly, hey, I'm facing control warrior with golden fucking everything, and I'm playing my like casual zoo list with like spreading darkness and Cthulhu at the top, and you're just like, what the fuck's going on? Why am I facing off against these highly competitive players? Well, that's because they start so much lower.
It's so actually a bad experience. That bumping, it's a bad it's experience for it's the casual awful. Players too, like early.
They just get smashed.
Yeah, so yeah, dude, it's like, it's not good for anybody.
The forums, dude, the official Hearthstone forums. The rage threads on this place are just pure beauty. It's innocent,
shattered,
and turned inwards into like the most vicious rage, man. The guy's like, okay, I thought Hearthstone was a good game, but then insert like tirade about all the like pay to win. It's like the old Dr. Move argument again. It's not really the case, though. Like, it isn't the case, but when they're a casual player facing off against a control warrior at rank 15, they feel like they're getting cheated out of something, even though they're really not.
Yeah. So, in general, what we're saying, nobody's having a great time with this early season experience.
I don't know why they chose, like, setting us back to rank 16 as the cutoff. Like,
I don't.
Whose decision was that? That's just, like, absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I agree. Well, why don't we move on? We spent a good amount of time on that. But hopefully there's some suggestions. Hopefully some of the Blizzard people are watching. And I don't know, maybe some of those things will resonate with them. But I'm sure this subject will come up again once there's any kind of news on some ladder things being discussed by Ben or whatnot. We'll be talking about it again on Value Town. So don't worry. This is like, this conversation's not over, at least on the show. Okay, well, why don't we do our kind of just real quick, just some fun decks. So talk about some decks that we've seen that have been interesting. Before I do that, I just want to give a shout out to some of our patrons that support Value Town. We do have a Patreon for it. So if you guys enjoy the show, want to help make the show better, you can go to patreon.com/valuetown and just pledge there and take a look at some of the rewards. But I do want to just kind of go through some patrons every single week. Dustin DeMar, Dan Zimborski, Gray DeRoach, Eric Cobb, Vincent Gobel, Ariel Tabak, Michael Lucy, thanks so much for supporting the show. And then on iTunes, I want to give a shout out to Felonious Monk for the 5-star review. That helps the show a great deal too. So if you guys, I know a lot of people listen to the show on audio. If you guys want to support the show, just definitely leave a feedback and a 5-star review, and really, really appreciate it. Okay, let's take a look at some decks, just some fun decks to look at. I decided to endeavor in that Nazoth Yogg. The Nazoth Yogg archetype that we were talking about last week with Jackie. And I came up with something like this. This is definitely different than his, because he had a bunch of things like Ball of Spiders and very greedy things that I just can't see how you win with stuff like that with a deck like this. But the general concept is it's a Yogg Reno Nazoth deck. And Reno just healing for Hunter is obviously the only way to heal for Hunter for the most part to actually have some kind of impact. And then Nazoth, there's just Hunter cards that just have death rattles, and Nazoth makes a lot of sense if you're playing control. And Yogg is just game saving at times, just like kind of a miracle kind of thing.
Even if it casts like a few spells, it doesn't have to cast that many, even just like 5 spells, you're good to go. In that list at least.
Yeah. So this deck, I mean, it's worked really well against Vdoo. It's been so probably not very successful against any of the Warriors, or Tempo Warrior particularly. But it's okay against Shaman. It's definitely okay. There's not a ton of draw in this deck, so that's been one of the big issues. And that's the thing with Hunter, right? It's like, it's hard to heal. It's hard to draw cards. There's all these like problems that are tough to solve with Hunter. But it's a lot of fun, though. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this deck? I was curious from...
Well, Finley. Why are we not putting Finley?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that too. Yeah, I probably should put that in. It's just there's so many good cards, man. There's like so many good cards to play here.
I don't want to have to be the guy that has to say this because, you know, Fiery Bat's my bro. But I feel like Bat should be taken out over Finley, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's... I'm taking myself out of your deck, but...
taking your side.
It's better than taking your deck out of...
You have Death Rattle.
Yeah, it's Death Rattle, but, like, you don't care. You don't really care. Honestly, just makes the brawl better against you, you know? So it hurts at the end of the day. So I think Finley over that would be a little bit better, and I think you could maybe even squeeze in an Acolyte of Pain somewhere to help with that draw problem.
Mm-hmm. With the Wild Pyro, it can do some cool stuff as well. There's a Dread Scale as well, which works with it. So, yeah, you've got some... Like, you can even unhunt your own Acolyte of Time. Yeah. Like, it happens. You'll find spots for it.
So I think Acolyte might be a good card to include as well.
God, it just seems what are we so doing slow, with... though. It just feels so slow, and then the end that of it is tough, because as long as I draw Reno, if I get the games I get Reno, then it's like, yeah, it's great.
You know what? Here's a card you have to put in that you haven't. That's Polluted Hoarder. It looks like complete trash, but...
There's no way that card's good.
No, it's not a good card, but if he's struggling for card draw in this list, if he doesn't want to put in the Acolyte...
I would say put in Loot Hoarder over putting Polluted Hoarder. Like, Polluted Hoarder's garbage.
Like Fiery Bat for Finley.
And Fiery Bat for Finley, for sure. I don't like the Unleash the Hounds that much. It doesn't synergize great with Wild Pyromancer.
We got Power Shot already, so you could as well...
Yeah, we already have Power Shot.
Yeah.
Put in the Acolyte there.
Just more for Houndmaster, I guess. But yeah, that's true.
We just don't have a lot of 2-drops.
What about we cut Houndmaster? Like, how many Bs do you have once you cut the fucking Fiery Bat? And
Yeah, Houndmaster should probably go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there should definitely be a Loot Hoarder. Just like, you don't have any 2s, right? You need cards, right? You don't have any 2s. Right?
Like, I literally have barely any taunt in this deck.
Well, you got Infested Tauren, and...
You got Reno.
And I've got an Animal Companion, maybe, and it's
okay,
like...
Put in Chill Maw with... Okay, put in the Shurtrake and a Chill Maw. There you go. You're good to go.
Oh, you got the Drake already, dude. Chill Maw's terrible.
Dude, he's got Nuzoth. I have put Chill Maw in a few of them.
Just for Nuzoth to generate taunts, you know, just to save. But not in this deck. I haven't done it in this deck, for sure. Okay. Yeah.
The best deck for Chill Maw is the Shaman.
Shaman one. Like, yeah,
Shaman. Yeah. You get the Chill Maw down, then you Ancestral Spirit it, so it comes back to life when it dies, then they kill it twice, and then you play Nuzoth and get 2 Chill Maws. Yeah. You just have a never-ending wall.
Then
they
kill one, which damages the other, which then kills the other.
Okay. You don't run any dragons to avoid that problem.
So you cut Ysera out of that deck, I see.
Oh, yeah, you don't run Ysera. You run Double Faceless, Double Ancestral Spirit.
Well, you ended up adding the Faceless after all.
It's Crusher,
man. We discussed that a while back, dude.
Yeah, we discussed it. Yeah. I put in the Facelesses. Me and Purple were able to get to top 10 with that at some point earlier on.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
The
Faceless.
You
can get the things.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you cut Ysera, you go Facelesses.
Yeah, you get the things from below down to 0, and then you go things from below Ancestral Spirit, Faceless it. It's 20/20 stats for 7 mana with Taunt.
I've done that in my experiments with my Crusher Shaman, too. Yeah. It is crazy ridiculous. So, Donia, you've been like quiet. What do you think about this deck? Is it just crazy bad or what? What do you think?
I just keep seeing the Infested Tauren and wondering about it.
How do I run a Nuzoth if I don't even have like Infested Tauren?
Is that just like the worst taunt? It's like they made it as bad as they could possibly make it, and people still play it. I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
Has it been good?
I mean, it just functions as a taunt, because I feel like a lot of times when you're in a situation where you're playing a Nuzoth deck, you're being tempoed down, and that Nuzoth play almost has to stop what's on board for you to survive, and then you to win, right, the following turn, or just at least flip the board. And so, I mean, that's why I even add Chill Maw at times in Nuzoth decks, just so I at least have some kind of taunt whenever I make that play. Otherwise, it's just like, okay, I get my Savannah Highmans and my Savannahs and things like that, and my Infested Wolves, but I still die to whatever's on the board, right? So that's mainly the reason. When you're not playing Paladin, you don't have Tyrion, you know, it's like everything else is kind of rough,
that's
not having taunt.
Yeah, but if you just like cut the cards that aren't great standalone and then put that in like good standalone cards, you might be less behind when you get to that Nazoth turn.
Yeah, that's true.
You can actually play it. Because if you get Sylvanas or Hymen or even Infested Wolf back from Nazoth, any of those three, I think you're fine if you've been kind of consistent on board with pressure against them. So if you're able to just get rid of Houndmaster, get rid of Infested Tauren, and replace them all with like better value minions, have a stronger curve going into it, be less behind, any of those coming back into the game.
Okay. Like I said, like if I have Reno, it's like a completely different game. It's just like, oh yeah, I have enough time to do Nazoth without any kind of taunt or anything. But without it, it's just like I feel like there needed to be some cards taken, you know, just put in the deck to prevent that from happening. But I see your point though. Just better cards just generally will make it less likely to happen. Okay, well, that's that deck. Another deck I wanted to just maybe bring up was the Enrage Warrior deck, which I was talking to Sidonia about this deck a little bit. This was just a deck that I pulled off of Hearthpwn and somebody got to Legend with, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, it's obviously a Yogg. It's a worse version of, you know, just tempo decks, or even just mostly just tempo warrior, but it does have some interesting elements where the end game is definitely interesting, and it's more of an enraged combo type of ending. Versus, say, like a Patron Warrior, say, like, you know, just your typical tempo deck. And, of course, it has Yogg. Yogg is just more, again, just from one of those miracle wins or just fun and whatnot. But what do you guys think of it? Axe Flingers, Girabashi Berserkers, any thoughts?
Yeah, they will not have a fun time against decks running two Kodos, that's for sure.
Oh, my God.
Kodo's going to crap on you. But the thing is, like, with Paladin out of the way, and Hunter is, like, opting to run, like, the one copy of it. If they do, some people just don't even anymore. I mean, the Girabashi is a big surprise to me. I'm just like, holy crap.
I think over Axe Flinger, you could maybe find more success running the 3-5 Enrage card. It also fits the theme.
Yeah, the Amon.
You just try to maintain the theme a little bit with the suggestions. I think the 3-5 Enrage guy that enrages for +1 attack would be a little bit better than Axe Flinger, just because you're not a face deck.
Yeah,
like
that's right.
You're definitely more of a board centric. Like your curve is very solid. You got just tons of on curve things. So
it's mid, yeah, it's
I mean, actually, unless you get wins from hand though, which the other one doesn't, right? Like you can get some really funky wins with Axe Flinger.
How much damage are you expecting this Axe Flinger to do? Like you get Pyroblast people.
You go Axe Flinger. Let's say Ghoul Whirlwind plus a Bloodtaker on it, like that. That's on its own already, like 6 damage to face, which Warrior doesn't have. So
we already got Yogg in the deck to accomplish those kind of dreams.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it does only one card, so.
Okay. I see. You don't believe in the Axe Flinger. I get it.
Axe Flinger is just fun. Right. Yeah. It's a good Tavern Brawl card.
It's a good Tavern Brawl card. Wow, yeah. Yeah.
The dream.
Girabashi, though, man. Yeah, definitely have had many bouts with Girabashi trying to get that thing to work.
I feel like Girabashi and Axe Flinger work the exact same way, right? Which is, they both let you make those funky dreams, as you allude to. So, like,
where's
they
the
both
bouncing
end up
blade,
just snowballing. Yeah, if there was, I think you'd be able to play it in this deck, though, funny enough. Like, that's the crazy part.
Have you ever played Axe Flinger OTK Warrior?
Dude, I have so many times. It's a dream.
Rampages and bouncing blades.
Oh my God. It's nuts.
That I have.
It's totally nuts. A lot of fun. That deck's a lot of fun, too. Anyways, just take a look at it, guys. I think it's just good sometimes just to take a look at, you know, different variations
like
of things. You're just enraged, right? Like, sometimes these type of archetypes are just, like, one or two cards away from actually being something. So it's good to at least take a look at different things. Okay, well, that's going to be it, guys, for at least the, you know, just deck talk or whatever. And we're going to do some Q&A now. I don't think anybody's tweeted any. So, no, oh, here we go. Somebody actually did tweet something. T. Jefferson. And if you guys want to actually, by the way, ask your questions, tweet them to @ChamanV or @ValueTownGG. And I'll take those. If not, just type them in the Twitch chat. And Noxious, you mind looking at Twitch chat and seeing if you see any great ones as I read this one?
Sure.
Skip to Leg Day ask, any of you guys playing Wild? If so, what decks are you using that are fun? If not, why not? That's a good question.
I've played a bunch of Wild. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me why, but Nazoth Priest is
Nazoth
far
Priest.
One of the best decks.
Yes,
it's absolutely insane. You have all the defensive mechanisms, and then of just being Priest, you know, you got like Light Bomb, you got Alkanite Circle, you have, you know, you're just good death rattle minions as well, and then you always win against control because you have double Entomb and Enzoth to bring back the world. And you can't lose against control. You can't lose against aggro. Went something like 55-0 with Nuzoth Priest. It's really good and wild.
And I told you about that last time on the show, right, Shaman? I was like, it's so stupid. Like, the wild is just... It's either secret pallies that let you use Eater of Secrets and still fuck you up with Keeper of Uldumon, or it's like Priest just Nuzothing. There's like nothing else than this. That's it. And like, I can't wait for Entomb to get rotated out of standards so Priest can finally be given good cards. Because as long as that shit's around, like, this is. You can't give this class anything.
I feel like you can still give something, but...
Sure, give him something and see how well that goes. Like, I know. That card is like Light Bomb 2.0.
In Wild, it's ridiculous. And, Sidonia, have you played any? I actually have a story with Wild that I'll tell in a second. But Sidonia, you played any Wild?
I've played the Rogue deck, Enzoth Rogue.
Oh.
That is actually pretty fun as well, because you can put pretty much any card into it. Like, you can do a Reno variant, or you can just do like the more consistent one with Raptor and Egg and all the cards that you don't want to see anymore.
It's ridiculous. It's crazy good. Yeah.
And you can work on your Golden Rogue without having to play Miracle into Shaman, so that's nice.
Oh, that's definitely true. So I hosted a Fireside Gathering this past weekend, and we always do Wild tournaments at the, just Swiss, actually this is the first time we did a Swiss tournament, but we did Wild, this past weekend. And so I wasn't prepared. So I just kind of threw some together. And then, after losing the first round, then I started to adapt. But Eater of Secrets, yes, everybody runs Eater of Secrets in every one of their decks.
It's, but it doesn't matter. It's bad.
It's really bad.
It doesn't win. It's useless, dude.
Well, people run it just because of Secret Paladin, right? But it
loses against
them. It doesn't
them.
Stop. Yes, yeah. I know. It doesn't
not
stop.
Good against.
But people, they run it, though. And then I was playing Wild and on Ladder 2, and people run it. I don't know why. But anyways, so that one thing, Priest, like you said, was just ridiculous. Dude, Zoo, I just like, I'm just seeing all the eggs and all the Death Rattle minions again. I'm just like, oh, shit, dude. I forgot how powerful Zoo was, even though it's powerful now. It was dumb good before. So those are the two decks that really stood out to me. I thought Hunter would be good. Just with, just still with Mad Scientist and things. But then I forgot. I was just like, oh, yeah, Hunter sucked when all these cards were still back in the game. So, the Priest was ridiculous. Shifting Shade, just stealing quality cards from your opponent, and you're removing board and getting all those quality cards back from Nuzoth. It's disgustingly good. So, yeah, the winner, nonetheless, they were running a Priest deck. Actually, Strelzik won it. It was a Priest deck, and I forget what his second deck was.
What, Priest?
No, it can't be both Priests. It's just one. It was a Priest. It was best of three, so you had to bring two decks.
Okay.
I can't remember. I think it was the Tempo Mage. That's what it was. Tempo Mage was. I don't know how he won with that. That was kind of crazy. But so anyways, Wild is fun. Wild is fun, but those decks are super, super strong. But I would advise just trying it out at least, and trying to come up with something cool.
It's tougher though, like for people who don't have cards, right? Because you don't want to go back and start crafting light bombs. You're just like, nope. And you kind of need them if you want to be playing those, insane decks.
You definitely realize how much that class depends on Light Bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, and still even right now, it's wishing that Light Bomb
But it just
existed.
Doesn't have it. Yeah. It sucks, right? It just doesn't have access to it, but it still depends on it.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Samuel Hendrickson asks, when I have Fandral and Azure on the board, why does my Wrath do 5 and not 6?
Yeah, because Fandral combines effects of the choose ones. Yeah. So it combines the two and it combines them both, and then you get the spell power of them both. So it just deals 4. It deals 3 and 1 put together to make it 4. The spell power gives +1, so it's 5.
That's right. Yeah.
We can play Volt Cobalt if you really want to get 6.
That's true.
Okay.
Let's see. Skip asked another question too. What do you guys think of Purple and Amnesiac's Nuzoth Shaman? Didn't we just talk about this? Let me see.
The question is a different one. Can you refine?
That's my Nuzoth Shaman.
Look at this, man. Yeah. There's going to be a dispute.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I think
I made it with Purple right there. We were on that TV in the living room chilling because he's living with me now. And he just the credit for my tag.
Flag, man. Copyright flagged right there, man.
So what about Amnesia's Fire Purple Ancestral Shaman? It's like how, right, do you think you could technically refine that deck to make it tier one, or is it forever going to be the only shaman deck not in tier one?
See, this is my shit right here, dude. I like this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
As long as you play like the Mana Tide, your healing wave is like almost always 14 as well. So it has like tons of healing, actually.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. How is Yael been for you? Because I just can't card to like be worth the shit for me.
It's pretty solid. And some of the matchups that you don't need healing, you just throw it out there. You have Emperor Thorasan, which can allow kind of good things to happen with it as well. And, you know, sometimes in the grindy control matchups, you just need to Halazeal Elemental Destruction and heal to full health. It's like Reno Jackson in a deck that runs all two oats. So it hasn't been bad by any means.
All two of Shaman class cards.
Yeah.
Almost. Like,
my issue with Halazeal was I was running into, you know, obviously a lot of decks that, you know, not like Zoo decks, obviously. I mean, it's amazing against Zoo, but against, you know, like C'Thun decks or decks that just put one or two minions at a time. And, you know, I'm kind of keeping up with it, right? So a lot of times I'd throw Halazeal down and I would just get, well, you know,
do you play Stormcracks? That's my question. Because, like, if you don't play Stormcracks, you lose to those really hard. Like, those decks you're alluding to, because you need that four health spot, even five sometimes with spell damage increase. Like, Stormcrack basically carries that deck through the matchups where it usually struggles with. At least that's what I found.
Oh, man, really?
So, it's so good. It's really good. It's really fun.
At worst case, Halazeal is like a Druid of the Claw. It's a 4-6 with Pseudo-Taunt. They kind of have to kill it, because otherwise, you know, your healing starts adding up with things. And then sometimes if you're, like, really low against a C'Thun deck that doesn't have too many minions and you're afraid C'Thun's going to come out and kill you, you can always, like, Halazeal Totem Elemental Destruction, and then Lava Shock the following turn to unoverload.
Yeah.
So you're able to then get, like, if they have one minion out, for example, you get 15 heal right there. So
Yeah. Oh, this deck looks fun, dude. I'm definitely gonna have to try this out, because my deck's actually pretty close to this. It just doesn't have Nuzoth.
It's very that's the thing, like, it's very different, because like that Stormcrack and that Nuzoth.
Just be very wary of Sylvanas.
Yep.
You're gonna be jumping for joy with your Karen Bloodhoof, and then you'll just Ancestral Spirited, and then they'll like Sylvanas Shield Slam, and then you'll just flip your table.
You just have to be very
afraid of that. So just make sure they don't have any armor, so they can't Sylvanas take your thing when you go all in. And then, you know, against Control Warrior, obviously try and focus on getting Ancestral Spirit to go off on the Karen Bloodhoof, so that your Nuzoth brings back multiple Karens, so they'll have to brawl twice and you'll still have things left over. And try not to draw too many cards against Control Warrior, because you do need to kind of go to fatigue.
Generally speaking, I say, like, this deck can be refined to, like, be a contender, like, on ladder, but in tournament settings, I'm not so sure.
Well, it's like, the problem is...
That's like... Okay.
It's a gimmick you know about, right? So it can't be like tier one you're looking for.
You have to not play the other shaman to play this shaman, which is...
That too.
No, it's not going to happen, right?
The hybrid aggro shaman, well, I guess it's just called aggro shaman now, but the shaman with things from below is just absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. I have like 71% win rate in like 400 games with that deck.
It's
every ladder meta that has happened so far. That deck's always been like, yep, pretty good. So it's just...
Easy. Since it's inception, easy. That's true,
It just seems like unreasonable to me not to bring aggro shaman to every single tournament.
We have a question from Mimesian in the chat. It says, Ben Bro said that there might be a viable priest archetype that hasn't been discovered yet.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Do you believe
so? Yeah.
So he alluded to...
They know something that we don't know.
Yeah,
basically.
I mean, like, I'm guessing it's Confused. That's the only card I could see. Or like,
Confused? Really? Like a Convert, combo? Confused. Like a big old combo? Confused?
Some shit we don't expect that they think could do well.
Well,
I just can't keep minions on the board. I mean, it's...
I don't know.
Yeah, like, how do you...
They told me... Remember when Naxxramas came out and they said Avenge was the best card in Naxxramas?
Yeah.
That didn't get played at all from Naxxramas. Undertaker was in that set. So, I don't know. They may just be kind of like pulling your leg, because they have been kind of incorrect in the past.
I just have to say Hemet Nissingwary, because Great Beast deck. Like, the moment you remember that quote from Blizzard, you can disregard the fact that there's like a lurking deck we don't know about.
Yeah,
like, I just disregard the fact that there might be like a There's nothing. There's no priest deck. There's nothing.
I'm trying to think of what it would. I mean,
abandon hope. Abandon.
I know me and you, Noxious, have like, oh, we definitely play a lot of priests and try dumb shit sometimes.
We have tried some really wonky shit.
And I have Firebat too, I'm sure. Like in Sidonia, I don't know. Have you played much priests? Have you tried crazy
I've
stuff?
Given up on priests.
You've given up on priests. You've given up on the smart ones.
I like that shit.
He's one of the smart ones. But I've tried all kinds of things, man. Like, so I still haven't quite nailed it. I mean, you can all, you know, every once in a while come up with a confused thing, you know, like facelessing things and confusing just faceless with even just whatever type of combo-y inner fire type of things too. But you know, the one card that I'm surprised that nobody's come up with even a fun deck for is the. Is a scaling dragon or the one that
scale dragon
that doubles all the time. I still haven't seen anybody do anything with that. Like
priest is not in the meta, so you don't get Cabala Shadow Priest. So I guess you could play it.
Unfortunately, Kodo is though. But you can get you can get yourself out of that really quickly though.
Yeah, you give it like a flame tongue next to it, so you can play shaman now with scale dragon on top of all the other stuff.
Or just like because like scale dragon inner fire
inner rage.
No, it's not. Is there inner rage? Yeah, inner rage.
You know anything?
God,
really.
I'll keep thinking. I get them all mixed up after a while.
Inner fire is the one you're thinking about. It makes it 8 and then 16 on the following.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Like it's the combo, and right? Yeah.
Then they just execute it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Why so, you have to be such a
nice
daughter?
Job designing an entire deck.
We can have two of them though. We can have two.
All
they have two executes.
I believe.
So exactly, priest. I don't know what else we could do.
Haven't tried like, honestly. So it's one of those.
We just can't
like,
keep minions on the board. It's like I don't like.
So the problem is Northshire cleric is so contested. Like, it's a difficult cycle with Northshire cleric and. That priest is successful when they're able to do it, but everyone's got 3/2s on one, so you can never play it on one. If you hold it off the mulligan, you're less likely to find things to remove and play your curve, and then you're forced to kind of AoE at that state, and you're just waiting for this draw combo that if it comes, you can sometimes win. If it never comes, you lose, and the odds of it coming are less than the odds of it not coming, so then you have a negative win rate.
Yeah, and then the combo selections, I mean, I know they, like with Embrace of Shadow and stuff, they... are leading towards maybe a Prophet Valen type of combo, you know, with Emperor Thorazan or something. But it's hard to draw your entire deck with priest, and B, you just have to survive given all of these tempo decks.
Like I'm being very categorical about there's no deck out there because, you know, we keep being surprised by that random deck coming out. Like, what I think could at some point work is something not revolving around, but including cards like Spawn of Shadows. You know, like you're playing the tempo cards and you're hoping to get the board.
You can't play Spawn of Shadows. You don't have one drops to fight for the board in your deck.
That's right. That's right.
The issue is you're 1-3
your two drops
just
suck.
Dead. Yeah, you're fucked. Like
you play a 1/2 and they're just like, okay, free trade.
Yeah, they don't care at all. I've tried everything ranging from injured Valdir to get like a little early lead. Who knows?
I tried
even
that too.
You circle
yes,
it. Like
yes,
when you
yes,
go
dude,
like Valdir, coin Valdir, like circle, they still win. Like it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you one drops suck.
Because you got nothing.
If you gave Priest another couple circles, maybe you could actually pull some things off, but either I choose to like buff these guys that give me a slight advantage and give up my full board clear later, or at least my mid-range board clear later, or it's like I have to do one of those.
I was working on a custom card creation episode yesterday for the YouTube channel, and like one of the cards that I came up with was a 2-drop that made it so your minions dealt attack equal to their health instead of their attack, so you could actually make them. Like it's kind of a cornerstone of your priest archetype, and you don't get punished for running shit like tournament medic.
Right.
Instead, you can still do something with it, so you don't rely on inner fire gimmicks or confuse where they suddenly have low health. But it's like we're missing. Like if they want to emphasize the whole inner fire shenanigan, then they have to really support it more because I feel like we're missing a lot of it to make priests even remotely able to burst.
And the only deck I've seen with Priest lately, I have a friend who really likes to play Priest, and he always makes these really weird decks. Like, he always wanted to test with me for the tournament, and he's like, do I play my lineup or a real lineup? Because his lineups were always like Reno, Cartoon Priest, and other decks in that vein. But he was he convinced me to try his Priest on ladder this week, and it didn't even seem so bad. But after like three games, he left, and I stopped playing it, so... But he thinks it's really good. So if I ever get it to work, I'm going to let you guys know.
Oh, you do that. I like the idea. There's another question before I guess we kind of ease towards the end.
Yeah.
Opinions on Yogg in competitive environment. Yeah, is it healthy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you guys think?
Sidonia, what do you guys...
I don't like Yogg existing.
Okay.
Wow.
Crummy that it exists. It causes...
Ouch.
The big downside to Yogg existing, like, the upside is cool. You can build your deck around it, and then that requires skill, and getting to the point where Yogg influences the game maybe requires skill. But there's a lot of instances where you can play Yogg, and everything that happened in that game up to that point becomes irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that's... that's mind-boggling to me. It's like, all right, you play in this like 20-turn game, and you get down to the point where you can finally play Yogg after 20 turns, and then you play it, and nothing else matters from that point. Like, there's things that Yogg can do that you cannot prepare for, and that's not like as low of a percent as you think.
Yeah,
the fact that Yogg can just instant win the game and make nothing else matter that game. Like, if it happened 1 out of 10 times or 1 out of 20 times,
wish,
like,
no.
Sure, yeah. That's fine. But it's like, I'd say it's like, you know, like, 30% of the time, you're going to get these Yogg turns that are very, very difficult for your opponent to stop, which is kind of ridiculous.
I mean, it's proven to be good for you. Then, I mean, it's. I think everybody will agree that Yogg plays, if you have like, say you have a disadvantage. I mean, the board is at a disadvantage for you. A Yogg play more like, I don't know exactly how much more, but definitely more so than not, it will always be good, will be good for you. And I think just even statistically, I think it's proven that even just all the spells that you can possibly get, I think there are more that are good for you in that situation than bad for you. So using it as a get out of jail free card, I mean, you could literally just put a Yogg deck into some, you know, into any deck that has like 10 spells and potentially, you know, get out of a losing situation, like a 100% losing situation. And
Yogg Priest, that's maybe that's the deck. Yeah. Jeez,
maybe that's the deck with Priest. That's it.
Are we dumb?
That's it.
TJ played Yogg Zoo to like top 10 legend
with Spreading Madness in it, guys. With
Spreading Madness, Bane of Doom, Yogg Zoo.
Yep.
I played the deck. I don't know how he won with it. I literally don't. Yogg must have did a lot of work.
Spreading Madness did, you know.
You have to never draw Spinning Madness because every time you draw it, you're going to lose. It's going to ruin your face.
I mean, it's Zoo for Christ's sake. I mean, you're going to be killing your own minions.
Fuck off. That card sucks, guys.
But if you never draw it, I see how you can claim with the deck. But.
Okay, I like that. That's good. So Renounce Darkness Warlock is what you're saying we should be playing.
Oh my god.
Like,
what's Spinning Madness?
I know you tried, right? You tried Renounce, right? Have you solved the Renounce? Have you solved the Renounce problem, the magical renounce problem?
I've completely solved it. The card's bad.
The card's bad. Dang it. Dang it, man. I was hoping for something better than that, but all right. Yeah, so Yogg, it's definitely fun, but yeah, competitive wise I think it's definitely a scary thing, and it's too bad because it's definitely exciting from a casting standpoint, but from the standpoint of just fairness and skill or whatnot, it doesn't feel right.
Yeah. As a caster, honestly, you can't cast the cards, so it doesn't really matter. Like
guys,
wait, like Yogg's gonna be coming out soon, and then it's played, and then it's like you can't commentate what's going on, or at least not very much. And like, it's one of those.
It's always
where, like,
depressing,
right?
Like I've casted games before, and then Yogg's came out, and then I was casting the entire game, talking about the skill of the players, making sure up the game and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, this is making all the decisions. He set himself up in a great spot. He's probably like 90% to win the game, and then oh no, the opponent top decks Yogg, and then they play Yogg, and then it's just like, well, the now he loses.
The guy like lay on hands himself exactly where he needs to be. Full healing wave gets embraced the shadow healing wave. The opponent in the face for 14, like just like full retard. I mean, it's what the card is meant to do. The only issue is like when I raided the old gods at first, I put Nazoth at the top and Yogg as second. And looking back on it, I feel like I should be swapping them now, like. Because the problem with Nazoth is you can play around Nazoth. You can't play around Yogg. And so at this point, it's like,
Yogg's not always good though. I mean, consistency. I still say Nuzzaut's better than Yogg. Like if you're ranking him,
sure.
Nuzzaut's is consistent. It's very.
It warped the meta to the point where it became worse. Whereas Yogg-Saron does not give you that opportunity. Like you can't make Yogg-Saron worse. You just get Yogged. That's it. Like you just sit there and take
it. It's not very fun or interactive.
It's true though.
Sure.
It's not.
Like their whole motto of their balancing and stuff like that is fun and interactive. Fun and interactive. We can't have this. We can't have that because that wouldn't be fun and interactive. And then they go ahead and print Yogg, which completely decides games.
But
by itself.
I'll give you one thing though. initially, when the card was announced, Ben Brode mentioned that they were thinking of adding Overload that Yogg played to give you the Overload. And even though it would be like a minor issue sometimes, when you're losing a game, getting overloaded on the following turn is the last of your problems. It's living right now. When he said that, a lot of us were kind of dumbfounded. Like, well, this card's probably going to be shit anyway, so who cares, right? And then as it turns out, the card's not shit. The math was run into like 60-ish percent when you're so far behind, or 65 to get you out of a bad spot. And then all of a sudden, I feel like his argument stands a lot more, seeing how powerful Yogg is. Giving it a slight drawback might be okay.
Yeah, it might be okay. I don't know how much of a drawback it really is, though. Because
it's not that big.
There's not that many overload spells. And I mean, then does Lava Shock work, too, in the same way?
Do you just think it just feels worse to lose to Yogg, or is it that much better than the other 10 drops like Ketun and Zod and all these other cards that you win when you draw them, like Mysterious Challenger and Reno and... Mm-hmm. Like these build around cards that you win when you draw them, you lose when you don't draw them. And that's a direction they've been taking compared to before when it was a lot more like tempo decks with synergy like Mech Mage and Tempo Mage and like.
So you think like the whole build around one card and then you draw it, you juice. Like, I feel like that's still sort of the case. Like, tempo decks and mid range decks and aggro decks will have those very cheap cards in the early game that if they pick them up, you know, they're just so much better off win rate wise.
The game's like that right now with all of the cards. Every deck has cards that if they draw on the specific turn and play them on curve, their win rate shoots up by a huge margin. I've been doing a lot of tracking my stats with TrackerBot and then plugging the API into plugins and different programs to look at like win rates when you draw specific cards and all that sort of thing. And there's just cards that are clearly multitudes better than other cards in the game, and like just having Totem Golem on two, that's the classic one that everyone refers to, or Fiery War Axe on two, another classic one, or Doomsayer on two, all of those things that just skyrocket your win rate. And so if you can do that a bunch of games in a row, you're gonna win games. And that's really depressing to me that there's so many cards that are like so much better on certain curves. We've had that in the past too with Piloted Shredder. If you play Piloted Shredder on four, your win rate goes up through the roof. So
do you have some non-obvious examples, like cards you were surprised
What's a surprising card?
Surprising card? Beckoner of Evil was the most surprising. Beckoner of Evil increasing your win rate on Warrior more than playing Fiery War X on 2.
Wow. Seriously?
Seems strange.
That does. That's surprising.
Any other ones?
No, most of them were pretty except with Druid. It was kind of weird because the card that increased my win rate on turn three being played the most was Druid of the Claw, which the first time I saw that, it was kind of funny.
Turn three.
Like, you have to innovate it out, right? So, but yeah, everything else was kind of like what you'd expect. Like having Innervate in your starting hand increases your win rate more than having Wild Growth in your starting hand. Things like that, I guess, could be kind of shocking. And then, Doomsayer on 2 in Control Warrior was only 53% to win the game. So like it didn't actually influence the game all that much to have Doomsayer on 2 in Control Warrior. It was kind of interesting.
All right. Well, that's cool. I mean, that's cool that you keep all the stats with it. What tool do you use for that?
TrackerBot.
TrackerBot. Okay. Yeah, definitely try that out, guys. I have never used it before, so really curious because I'm just curious as to see what stats would show up for me too. But anyways, guys, we got to wrap. It's been almost 2 hours. I didn't think this show would actually run that long, but man, we just got talking. But that's awesome. That's what we want to do on this show. But Sidonia, first time on here. It's been a pleasure having you. Again, big congrats to you for winning this past weekend. Do you have any shout outs or anything you want to do before you take off?
Well, thanks for having me. It's really been great to be here. And I just want to shout out to like everyone that's reached out to me in the past few days to tell me they were rooting for me or they watched the games and enjoyed themselves. So I was overwhelmed with so many people reaching out to me, and that was really great. So shout out to you guys.
Yeah, awesome. And teams. Teams, guys. He's looking for a team. So you've got a season champion here. So definitely reach out to this guy. Firebat, always great having you, buddy. You're just like extended family at this point for our show. Thanks. And any shout-outs you want to do?
Just a shout-out to Cloud9 and my team. Send me places to compete and cast and stuff. So always appreciate that.
You got a stream and everything. You want to plug all that good stuff?
Oh, yeah, sure. I upload YouTube videos at firebat.tv, so you can check that out. And I stream at twitch.tv/firebat. And then my Twitter is firebat, and, you know, everything else firebat. So if you see firebat somewhere, it's probably me. I appreciate all the support from everyone that's following me on all that stuff. Thanks, guys.
All right, Noxious.
Yeah, shout out to Complexity. And you can always follow me on Twitter, col_Noxious, and NoxiousHS on Twitch if you want to watch.
And check out his Megatorps workshop, man. Like the thing that he was saying he was doing yesterday.
That's fun. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Like, the card creation is really, really cool. Honestly, like, I love doing that stuff.
Yeah, it's for those of you who don't know what Megatorp is, it's basically a show where Noxious puts together cards, just concepts for cards, and some of them are really good, and it'd be nice if maybe Blizzard took a look at some of them too at times, but it's a cool concept at least. So definitely check it out. For me, a big shout out to the three of you guys for coming on and doing the show with me. It was so fun today, and shout out to all the folks that watched. Were we hosted? I think we might have been hosted at one point. I just didn't see
Possible?
Which did were we gosh I got totally missed it if I did. Thanks to whoever did host us. I never look at Twitch chat while I'm doing the show, which is kind of bad in this particular regard. And big shout out to Tempest Storm for sponsoring the show, of course, and then their sponsors over here to the left, which is Twitch, G2A, and Curse. For those that are interested in the audios, we'll have the audios available in the next day or two. So keep an eye on that. YouTube will be available in the next, I don't know, hour, 2 hours. You can find that at youtube.com/chamamv. And my stream also is twitch.tv/chamamv if you are interested in any of my other shows, my Overwatch show and MMA show. Actually, I'm doing that soon. And that's going to be it, though, this week. We're going to be back on our normal days, Wednesday. So this Thursday thing is just like a one-time thing. So tune in again, 4 p.m. Eastern, next Wednesday for some more Hearthstone talk. So until then, for Sidonia, Firebat,